We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride. Along with Hayes Carline and Lauren Brooks, I'm Frank Franti. Live from Dome Hats on a Thursday. What a gorgeous day it is at the beach today. Is this any good?
This is fantastic.
Oh, my goodness. It's a beautiful day here at the beach. Glad you're with us. Stanley Pools Thursday, and I hope you're in that Stanley Pools pool today because it is that kind of a day. Golly, about 70 degrees or so. Not a cloud in the sky. I can see the beach. Lauren, isn't that the beach over there?
That is the beach.
Right past the palm trees?
You could go swim in the ocean if you wanted to.
I am so directionally strong. Magellan is kind of what they call me.
That's very impressive.
I don't know if that or not. So the beach is east. You know, it's east from here is where it is.
Is that right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there you go.
I used to live literally across the street.
Did you really? You lived nearby here? So you know this.
Yeah, if you go across this street and then to the right, there was a building right there. Lived right there.
All right. This is the last show I'll be with you. I'll be traveling to Los Angeles tomorrow. So we got a lot to do today. We'll talk some Jaguars football. We'll talk some Rams football a little bit today. The Rams. And you know, the Rams lost three in a row. They're kind of a struggling. Did you realize? And I guess you did. Matt Stafford has thrown a pick six in three straight games.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Make it four.
Let's make it four. Step in front one time, Brooks. That's what we're trying to do here.
I love it. And, I mean, it's not like our conversation about Jalen Ramsey got people fired up or anything yesterday.
About a four-minute segment. They set them all off. They all got
oh,
wound
yeah.
up. So it didn't change how I feel. I mean, how I felt about Jalen Ramsey, how I feel about Jalen Ramsey. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Want to get to the SEC championship game. You jacked up for that?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that is one of the themes of the show today. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're here hanging out with our friends at Dome Hats because they're big SEC fans, and we're going to have a Dome Hats happy hour here. People are going to come by and talk a little college football, Alabama and Georgia. I got some thoughts about that. But if Florida's not in it, I always want Florida. We're Florida guys. We're Florida people. But if Florida's not in it, this is kind of the right game. This is heritage. You know that? This is heritage. It's the South. I mean, it is the SEC, but Texas A&M in the game isn't the right game. South Carolina in the game isn't the right game. This is Vince Dooley and Bear Bryant and Herschel Walker and Johnny Musso, and you know what I mean? This game feels like this game should feel to me.
Well, and I think it's even heightened by the fact that you're talking about the greatest Georgia team possibly ever assembled.
Correct.
Versus the defending champion. And we don't normally see Nick Saban as a 7-point underdog in a game. You know, there's so many layers to this game. There's so many incredible matchups. And I have not looked forward to a game as much as I'm looking forward to Saturday's SEC championship game.
Yeah, and the atmosphere is going to be electric. Y'all have been to SEC championship games before. This one has extra meaning for the Georgia Bulldogs. Look, this is a team that I can't figure out if the fan base, because I'm not a diehard Georgia fan, I can't figure out if the fan base is confident right now or if they are very nervous because this is a team that constantly knocks them out.
I mean, this is a celebration of the South. That's what this game, that's really what that game is. Just like when Michigan and Ohio State play, it's certainly a celebration of Midwestern football at its highest. This game would be fun to be here. It's perfect that Zach Brown. You see where Zach Brown's going to play on the ESPN? Did she just had it? Did you see the hat he was wearing? Did she just promo?
I did not see the promo. I saw a picture on Twitter, but I remember seeing the hat. Now I don't remember what it said.
Did you see it, Zach Brown?
I did not.
Zach Brown, he does the promo. He says, hey, join me. His hat says Chris Stapleton.
That's right. I said it during Helmets and Heels when I saw Twitter. I said it out loud. I was like, oh, Zach Brown is playing, and of course he's wearing a Chris Stapleton hat.
I mean, that's kind of a tribute to kind of each other, which I think
that's my Spotify, basically.
Well, there you go. So there's that. So that's kind of a cool thing. So we got a lot to talk about today on the program. James Robinson not at practice today. Is surprised? I mean,
they have talked as the weeks have gone on, and Daryl Bevel echoed it today. I mean, he was like, he is not 100%. And the way he said it, coaches don't normally like to concede that unless the player, you know, is really battling it. And Urban has said that. You know, Urban has said that, you know, there's a lot of guys that probably wouldn't be able to play through what he's playing through. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, look, let's just be honest. if the Jaguars are trying to win as many games as they can win in this final stretch, I think it would make a lot of sense to sit James Robinson this week. Don't have him get on a plane across the country. Let him rehab the heel. Let him just rest the heel. And then bring him back, ideally, next Sunday in Nashville. It feels like he needs a week off. And let's just be honest. They're not beating the Rams with or without James Robinson. I don't care if
makes
the Rams have
sense.
Lost eight straight. I mean, they're just much better on paper than the Jaguars. They'll have to play an F game to lose at home to the Jaguars. So, I don't want to say that that's where they feel it's trending, but I think it would make a lot of sense and take care of him. He's a good young player. You want him, you know, to be here for a very long time. And while this isn't something that probably he's going to make worse or turn into something, you know, really debilitating, why take the chance? He's obviously battled. He's not the same guy. And they need to sit him down for a week.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, and even if this was a game you were going to win on the season, you should always try and win every game. But if it is a season where you're going nowhere, and it is, make sure you take care of your guys. You know, it makes a lot of sense. We'll see what happens. So we'll see. It's an interesting game. It's an interesting trip. You know, we're leaving. Tomorrow, all of us, the charter goes out tomorrow, and all of us flying commercial go out tomorrow, and it's this gorgeous stadium that we haven't seen yet. The Jags have seen it because they played the Chargers, but I haven't seen it. I can't wait to see the stadium. You know, we're staying at Marina Del Rey, which is gorgeous, and it's by the way, if you fly to L.A., you've been to L.A.?
Yes.
Have you been to L.A.?
Yes.
Okay, it's a wonderful place, but the LAX is by the beach, so you're really, of all this land in Los Angeles, the airport's about 5 miles from our hotel, which is kind of close there. So we're going to try to think. It's just an interesting trip. It's a wonderful, it's a gorgeous time of year out there because every time it's gorgeous, but it's not too hot out there. But I just wonder, can the Jags hang around in the game? Is this a game where the Rams have lost three in a row? They're desperate. The Rams started 7-1 and have now lost three in a row and are 7-4. So this was their year, man. They traded picks galore. How many times have they traded away picks? The picks for Stafford, the picks for Jalen. I mean, on and on, right?
They have no picks.
Yeah. I mean, they've got, and they have stars, man. They have Aaron Donald. They have Jalen Ramsey. They now have Von Miller. They've got Odell Beckham Jr. This is a desperate team. I mean, if ever you were going to be desperate, wouldn't this be when they are?
No question about it. And they don't like looking up and seeing Arizona sitting in first place. And it's not good enough for the Rams just to get into the tournament as a wild card. The Rams need to be hosting games in that stadium. That's what they've put all their chips on the table to do, to secure home field advantage. And they've got their work cut out for them to do that. And, yeah, it's Super Bowl or bust for the L.A. Rams more than any franchise right now in the league because of the significant draft capital that they've given away. Whenever this is over, the Rams are going to be miserable for about a 3 or 4 year stretch, unless Les Snead, the general manager, pulls the biggest rabbit out of his hat that he can find. Because if you don't have draft picks, you don't have a future, and they don't have draft picks. So you better win now and bask in that Lombardi afterglow for a while, because as soon as this ends, you're going to have some lean years.
And I don't think they have a good enough quarterback to win the Super Bowl, and so I think is all for naught. And you know, that's the interesting part, certainly, is the fact that the Jaguars have already faced Von Miller once this season, and now they get to face him again. But, yeah, I think the Rams are going to win easily, but I do think that Matthew Stafford is a quarterback that you can certainly take advantage of.
You know who's really become a good player, and not that we didn't ever thought he wouldn't, is Van Jefferson. What a terrific player he's become.
He's
become a really – now, he looked the part that – I didn't watch him at Ole Miss, but the minute he got to Gainesville, he looked the part.
Yeah, you liked him as an NFL player, like from the second you saw him.
The minute I saw him in Gainesville, I thought he would be a really good NFL player, and he has become a terrific
NFL player.
Yeah,
but two touchdowns last weekend?
Yeah,
one
was like a 79-yarder.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought when they signed Beckham that it would minimize Van Jefferson, but it really hasn't at all because then Woods got hurt.
Well, the one was the 79-yarder that he outran people because the guy fell down. The other was the ball that cupped through. that he had to kind of tiptoe in the end zone. And so it was a – I'm telling you, it was a – go back and just watch it, trying to watch the tape of the previous game.
Sure. When we Cooper call, Kupp when we call is going to be a difficult matchup for
what
this
a good
team.
Player he is, boy. Yeah. So, yeah.
All no Van one. Jefferson has to do is catch about three more passes, and he'll be the greatest Gators receiver in NFL history.
Ever of all time. Oh, goodness. So we got a lot to talk about. So, but I'm going to start with the celebration of the South. Georgia playing – again, we're Gator people. But if it's not the Gators, Georgia and Alabama – You know what Georgia and Alabama don't do, although Georgia did it for a while? They don't switch up the uniforms. You know, Georgia for a while wore the black pants, and then they said stop that. You know, maybe they wear an alternate one time a year, but Georgia's going to run out in those silver breeches and those red shirts and those red helmets, and the only thing's going to change when they're on the road is going to be a white shirt. And Alabama's going to wear – for a while there, Alabama wore white helmets, just like as an alternate. Like I want to say, gosh, maybe early 80s. And did you know that?
No.
Just for – not for very long. They reversed it, the white helmet with the crimson numbers.
I don't like that.
Oh, people lost their mind. Yeah. So this is tradition. It's a tradition look. It's a traditional game. It's almost a shame it's being played on turf. Almost should be played outside in the mud, you know, but it is a tip of the cap to two really good teams. And by the way, don't think Alabama's not going to hang around in that game. I'm just telling you, I'd be surprised if they don't hang around. I don't care what happened against Auburn last week. So let's kick it off by talking about what could be an SEC championship game for the ages. We'll talk some Jaguars football, what happens with James Robinson, how do you hang around with the Rams. Gator hoops last night, we'll certainly get to that. We'll talk some NFL. Brett Hastings stops by. I want to ask Brett about what are the legalities of work stoppages. Obviously, you know there's a lockout in baseball. By the way, in case you want to know what's going to happen, you want to wait till that or you want me to tell you?
Whatever you prefer.
Well, here's what's going to happen. Let me tell you what's going to happen in baseball, just in case you guys don't know, okay? There's going to be a lockout. The owners are going to say it's all the players' fault. The players are going to say it's all the owners' fault. The fans are going to say they're all greedy. In about 3 months, after they've missed a few spring training games and maybe a week of the season, they'll come up with the CBA, and it'll be the same as it is now. Just in case you're wondering, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's what it's going to be.
So why the lockout if it's just going to be the same thing?
Because both sides are fighting for stuff that the three of us don't give a damn about.
Right.
Okay? But they do. But at the end of the day, it's not changing. It's not. I can't. And later on the program, we're kind of around the time Brett gets here, I'm telling you what I would do. But we'll get to that.
You
later
do
on.
Not think the owners are going to go with the nuclear option of we will not proceed until certain demands are met?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think they'll both will draw a long line in the sand. There's going to be some really good looking lines, but you know a line in the sand is not a line in cement, and it's going to get pushed out. So you'll see. But let's start with the. SEC Championship game, a celebration of the South is what this will be on Saturday. We'll talk about that live from Dome in a bit. You can't celebrate the South without a Southern band, can you, Carline?
You cannot.
Allman Brothers today on Old Rock Thursday. Love the Allmans. They've made many appearances on Old Rock Thursday, but they're going to make one today as we celebrate Southern College football. The Allman Brothers from Macon, Georgia. Lauren Brooks.
Excellent selection.
Dickie Betts on the lead right here.
I was going to ask you that.
Dickie Betts sings the lead for Ramblin' Man. Dwayne Allman sings a lot of it. But Dickie's got a few. Greg Allman's got a few, but it's mostly Dwayne Allman.
But, time to eat a peach.
Time to eat a peach. Dickie Betts... And I read a story that he was like the renegade in the band. He was like the band renegade, and not everybody liked him. And so,
like Hayes on our show.
Like Hayes. Yeah. Well, I was looking at Hayes when I said that.
Right.
I was making the connection. So
they, renegade.
So only one
of the four of us will get a blue cocktail at a bar.
That's good. But that was a great day.
And a water pitcher.
And a water pitcher. How could I forget that part of it?
Alabama, Georgia. Is it easy for Georgia? They're a 6.5-point favorite. Does the game go to the fourth quarter? Does it not? We haven't talked a lot about it because we've had all the other stuff going on. This is a fun game, and I got all kind of thoughts about it. But easy for Georgia or no?
I don't think easy, but I don't think it's a lot of drama either. I think it's one of those where Georgia gets a touchdown with 8 minutes left that kind of wraps it up. And maybe Alabama scores an oh, by the way, late to make it a little closer. But I think Georgia covers. I think it's somewhere between a 10 to 17 point game. So I don't think it's a rout. I think at halftime, you know, it'll be fairly competitive. But Georgia's much better. I mean, that's just the. I mean, Georgia is. You break this game down, and Alabama's got a lot of talent, obviously, and they've got obviously the better head coach in the game. But Georgia is just so much better at so many spots and really doesn't have an overwhelming weakness, which this Alabama team actually does. So, yeah, I don't see a scenario in which Alabama can win the game unless Georgia just presses the pressure. You know, they're minus two in turnovers with 8 or 9 penalties. Then obviously Alabama has a path. But if they both play a relatively clean game, Georgia should win this game pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Georgia defense doesn't have any flaws, but I still have yet to be super impressed with this Georgia offense. And so that's where I think Alabama is going to put the pressure. It's a game that Georgia, I think, is going in nervous, even though they can make the college football playoff without it. They know that they never beat Bama, that they're the ones who always stand in their way, and they certainly want that number one overall spot. They are hoping to play Cincinnati in the college football playoff. I just think they come in tight, and I don't think their offense is as explosive as Alabama's is. Did Alabama play well last week? Obviously not. But overall, I think they have the big playability Alabama does that Georgia doesn't.
They were without Jamison Williams almost that whole game,
yep,
too.
Yep, because of the targeting.
Let me give you some thought starters, all right? A few thought starters on this game. The how many, question for you, how many top 20 defenses, right now, if you pulled it up right now, how many defenses in the top 20 in America did Georgia play?
How many top 20 defenses did Georgia play?
Did the Georgia offense face in these 12 games? Ballpark.
None.
I'll say one.
Who?
Florida.
Nope. Florida was
there. I don't think Clemson's in the top 20.
They're ninth,
oh,
actually.
Clemson, yeah.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
okay.
I just looked it up.
That's right.
But that was the first game, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown. That was the first game. And you didn't know who your quarterback was, and but they have not faced a lot of good defenses. When they faced Florida's defense, which was motivated, it was a 3-0 game with a minute and a half left in the quarter, left in the half. And then Florida then blew up, imploded, if you will, and Georgia got those short fields. But it was 3-0 against Florida's defense, which, again, when motivated, was okay. But I think the key element of this game is, and by the way, Alabama is ranked 7th. Alabama is ranked 7th in offense and defense. Only team in the country ranked in the top 10 in both, okay? The 7th-ranked offense in the country, the 7th-ranked defense in the country. And I think they're good on defense. I think Alabama can play defense. In fact, I think they're very good defensively. So I think, to me, the key to this matchup is what happens when Georgia has the ball. Because I think Alabama's defense is better than Georgia's offense. Now, that's what I think. Now, I think Georgia's defense is better than everybody's offense, including Alabama's. But that's what I think the key is. Don't get me wrong; I think Georgia's going to win the game. And I would lay, as I told you yesterday, I would lay the 6.5 before I would take them. I think it's 24-12. I think it's 24-16. It's that game. I think somewhere in there. I think it's there. I would lay the
it's
point.
Low scoring.
Yeah, I think it's a low scoring game. I think this is a low scoring game because I don't think Georgia has played a defense. Well, I know they haven't played a defense that's good. They haven't. They haven't played a defense with guys like Will Anderson. They haven't played them. So that, and it helps Alabama that they've played a different kind of variety of teams. So we'll keep an eye on that. The other thing too is Nick Saban really wants this one, because this is the most he's been doubted. Hadn't been an underdog in 6 years, since 2015. This is the, I didn't realize this, this shocked me, since he took the job, this is the 6th time they've been an underdog.
That's incredible.
He took the job in 07, okay? 5 times, he took 07, 5 times, have they been an underdog? I'll bet you 2 or 3 of them were in 07, by the way.
Well, I was going to say, 07, they were like 7-6.
So it's 5 times, and you know what? Make sure I don't get the stat wrong. Maybe it's since 07. That could be it. But anyway, I think it's 5 times they've been – 5 times before today they've been an underdog.
He was an underdog twice to Florida in the SEC Championship,
okay.
Split those.
Hadn't been much since.
Hasn't been much since.
Yeah, so I think 5 times. You want to know what their record is in those 5 games?
I'll guess 5-0.
4-1. 5 times they've been an underdog.
Yeah. It's since 2008.
Okay, so is that, since it's 5 times they've been an underdog since 2008.
Okay, so it's his second year at Bama. Is
okay,
where
okay. So
and that loss was the first one, because
right.
That loss was to Tebow
to the
in
national
the first
championship
meeting.
Team. That's right. So 4-1
and 4-0 in his last.
Yeah. So That, and you could see the
four times Alabama, sorry, Frank, was an underdog in 07. So the stat is since.
Since 07. So since the second year.
Yep.
So think about this now. Think about how much he wants that. You could see that he was giddy after that game.
Mm-hmm. He was.
It wasn't even typical Nick. He wasn't.
Ms. Terry was giddy too.
Yeah. He wasn't curmudgeonly. He was so. And I think this is as doubted. This, even when LSU beat them in the regular season and they came back and beat them for the championship, you kind of knew Alabama was going to win that game, whatever year that was. You know,
With Les Miles?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The 9-0 game.
Okay, right.
But you kind of knew Alabama was going to come back. Alabama was not doubted even after losing in the regular season.
Correct.
Okay. Now, again, nobody beat that team 2 years ago. I'm not talking about that. So,
but even in that game, Bama was favored.
Yeah.
It was their only time they played. That was sort of the LSU statement of, we're the best team in the country.
Even against them, right?
Yeah.
So, but my point is, they're being doubted now. Alabama's being doubted in large part because of the Auburn game. They took four overtimes to win, but they also know they're out. Now, what is a bunch of bunk is this belief, this narrative that, well, the game doesn't mean as much to Georgia, so they won't be as motivated. That's a bunch of crap, okay? I promise you, Georgia wants to go undefeated. Georgia wants that first seed. Georgia wants to win the national championship unblemished like LSU did a few years ago. You know what Georgia wants.
They want the SEC championship.
That means a ton. And, oh, by the way, they want to win the SEC championship. Yeah. So don't think for a minute they're not motivated.
Also, Jordan Davis could potentially be the Heisman Trophy winner. I think if he has a massive game Saturday night, that's also on the – or Saturday afternoon.
He will be in play. He will be in play.
I'm not saying he's going to win. But if he came out with 6 sacks, I think that may change the Heisman narrative.
Yeah, well, 6 sacks would. Yeah, six sacks would. 6 sacks would. It would probably change my vote. 6 sacks. But you're right. If he has a big game, he's going to be on the radar. But I will tell you, Alabama's going to play in this game, man. Alabama will play. I would be very, very surprised if, and this is going to be a crazy comment, so I'm going to tell you what I'm not saying, okay? I'm not saying that Alabama was looking past the Iron Bowl, because you never look past an Iron Bowl. Okay, so I'm not saying they were looking past it. But I am saying there will be more of a focus for them this week than there was last week. Even though it was Auburn, even though it was on the road, even though it was an Iron Bowl, have I lost my mind to think that?
I think they were focused for Auburn. I think Auburn just played their best game. I mean, defensively, Auburn played almost a flawless game, and had they gotten really any help from their offense, they would have won the game. So I don't know that it was focused so much. I mean, I think Alabama, I can't imagine that they wouldn't be up for the Iron Bowl. I get your point. I mean, they're going to quickly refocus.
I mean, they will have the chip on their shoulder this week. I don't think they had last
week. Well, that I agree with.
That's the point. There will be a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, they were a 19-point favorite overall.
Yeah, there will be a chip on their shoulder this week. So my point is, I think Georgia's going to win it. I think Georgia's going to win the national championship. I find myself thinking if it goes the way we all think it's going to go and it winds up being Georgia versus Michigan, because Michigan's so good on defense, I'm looking forward to that 6-3 game or whatever it's going to wind up being.
Right.
But, I mean, for now, I really think we're going to get a really good SEC championship game. So many times in these SEC, as much as we love the SEC championship, other than 09 when Alabama beat Florida, you pretty much knew who was going to win most weeks. I mean, you almost think all the way 01 you thought Tennessee, when Florida should have won, was going to beat LSU. That was a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
09, as good as Alabama was, people thought Florida was going to win that game and go back-to-back. So that was a shocker. But there have not been many shockers in the Southeastern Conference Championship game. There have not been many games that you didn't have a kind of an idea who was going to win, and that came through. Very few. Now, I'm not saying none, but very few.
Very few, because you've had – the conference usually produces a dominant team in the nation.
Right.
Now, most of those teams have been Saban's dynasty. But you have had Urban's Gators. You've had some LSU teams under different coaches that have been amazing. So the reason why I don't think you see a lot of upsets in that game is normally that game features one team that is clearly the best team in the country.
That's right. And you're right. And that team generally doesn't mess up. When LSU didn't mess up. Florida, the only time Florida ever messed that game up was when Alabama in 09, when Alabama was as good as they were.
And won the title.
And correct. So they didn't mess the game up. I mean, usually that really good team. And I'm not suggesting Georgia's going to mess it up. There's just something about, let's put it this way. If this was 11-1 Texas A&M playing Georgia, I'd have no doubt. If this was 11-1 Auburn, 11-1 LSU even playing Georgia, I'd have no doubt. Because it's Alabama and Nick. And in a year when Alabama's good, they're just not Alabama good. You know, they're still good.
And Bill and Doug.
Yeah. And there's Bill and Doug, too. There's the offensive coordinator du jour, which is what Alabama has these days. But I think it's going to the fourth. You think it's going to the fourth quarter?
I think Alabama's winning. So.
You think Alabama's going to win the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you stood your ground on this Georgia team to the very end. I applaud you.
I don't think their offense is nearly as good. Yeah. Their defense is so good that they haven't needed their offense to be that good. But I don't see Stetson Bennett going toe-to-toe with Bryce Young and coming out a winner. Yeah. Now, the defense, again, he may not need to. But I think if it's a shootout, Alabama wins.
I agree with Frank. I think it is very commendable.
I love it.
You're absolutely going down.
It's not because I dislike Georgia. Yeah. That the offense just has not shown to me. Do they have talent? Sure, absolutely. Brock Bowers is a fantastic tight end. They have talent. I just don't think they can go toe-to-toe with Alabama if Alabama plays as well as it could.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. But that's one I will – 1 o'clock kick where I'll be, and I'm going to schedule my day around that one. I can promise you that. I promise you. So I'm looking forward to it. So a lot of fun things. To talk. Let's take a break. I want to talk some Jaguars football. How you go about this Rams game? James Robinson, what did they do? What did they not do? A lot to do. Hey, we're live here at Dome Hats on a gorgeous day here at the beach. We are on 3rd Street, just a little bit south of Beach Boulevard. Come by and see us. They've got all kind of hats for sale, all kind of fun stuff. The happy hour starts around 5 o'clock here. We have a big time. Our friend Brett Hastings comes by in just a bit to talk about the lockout and what that really means. All that and more when we continue. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
I mean, you got to give James a lot of credit. I mean, he's not 100%. And, you know, the guy is, you know, I mean, I hate to use the terms, but, you know, he is a warrior. And he's fighting through, you know, the heel, the knee. He's out there for his teammates. And he's, you know, he's doing the best that he can. And the best is, you know, his best is pretty good. You know, we know that he's got more in it, you know, as well when he's fully healthy. But I love the competitiveness that he's showing.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be. Or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
Crossroads, same to come and go. Yeah. The gypsy flies from coast to coast.
The only bad part about me bringing it back on The Frangie Show is when you play artists that I love, I don't want to talk over some of their best songs, and this certainly is one of Allman Brothers'
my
best
favorite
songs.
My
yes,
favorite.
And certainly your favorite
my
song.
My favorite Allman Brothers song.
Melissa. So good, so good. All right. Daryl Bevel, Jaguars offensive coordinator, was just talking about James Robinson. We talked about him a little bit earlier in the show. He does have both the heel bruise and the knee injury, and he was not at practice today. Frank, to me, I don't think there's that much surprise that he may not give it a go this weekend based off of what we've seen. He just hasn't been himself.
Hayes made a great point at the top of the program. If you're sure, if you're not sure, why play him? You're not. We're pretty certain the season. And Hayes, you should say this because you're the one who made the point. I'm stealing your point, but it was a good one. The season's not going anywhere. He's a gigantic part of your future. He's earned the right to not get run into the ground in a season that's not going anywhere. I hadn't thought about it till you said it at the top of the program. I don't think I'd play. Since you said that, I've thought more. Even if he's a go, I don't think I'd play him.
They've just tried. He actually was limited today. The Jaguar injury report is out for Thursday, and they listed him as limited. Now that could be you don't have to do much to be limited, but it is a good sign that maybe he hasn't had a setback and just didn't go at all.
Right.
But I just think at this point, you have to look at it. I think if you're Urban Meyer, from the standpoint of, you'd love to get 6 more wins, but realistically looking at it, can we get 3 more wins this season and get to 5 and people start feeling better about what we're doing here? Well, you got to sort of manage your assets, I think, to get to that point. And if you've got a star player that's playing at 60%, which is what I think he's playing at, and you're getting ready to go across the country to play a team that if you did an open draft of the two rosters – of the first 22 picks, the Rams would have 17 of them. You know, why would you give him the 8 to 10 carries in this game on their turf and have him continue to batter that heel and the knee in a game that you just frankly don't have much of a chance of winning? It just seems like you'd be much better off giving him the week, hoping to get him back to the, you know, 90% range for when you go down the final stretch. And again, I don't think with Derrick Henry not playing, next Sunday in Nashville is not, to me, a game they have no chance to win. But they need James Robinson. And so I think it would make a lot of sense to rest him this week and tell him, you've been a great, you know, teammate here. You have gutted it out. We appreciate it. But you need to rest this week and get ready for Nashville.
Yeah, I think watching him the last few weeks, he has looked different. And so when it comes to evaluating everything, it's not like they're going to say, well, James, we're not going to play you this week, and people are going to think less of him in that locker room. Everyone knows he's already been playing hurt and giving it his all. So I just don't think that it's going to be a situation where James Robinson is going to lose respect in the locker room. Not at all. Everyone knows that he has been playing hurt, and I think they would rather have a healthy James Robinson out there. The issue, though, becomes you don't really have anyone else behind James Robinson. You have physical bodies, but they're not very good. Carlos Hyde's not very good. His yards per carry is way down below James Robinson's. And then Dario Gumboale, we saw him last week, drop the potential touchdown pass. That's the issue. You're taking a team that's already not as talented as the team they're facing on the road, and now you take away one of the best players, but I think for good reason.
What do they play with next year at running back? James Robinson, Travis Etienne, hopefully he's back healthy.
And Damian Pierce.
Let's go.
Do they bring Carlos Hyde back?
Well, I hope not.
You know they will because they love him.
But do you find more
than, can there be another Ohio State running back, though,
Grizzly
please?
Mom loves its cub.
But do you go out and get a more accomplished downhill runner who's similar to James Robinson? And I get it. That's what they thought they were doing this year with Carlos Hyde. But do you do that to lighten the load on him some? Because I don't think that's what Travis Etienne is.
Yeah, see, I think they're fine at running back because I still think that next year you're looking at Travis Etienne having a lot of carries.
Yeah, and you said that this year. You thought he was actually going to win the job this year, to your point. You believe that all along.
And so I still think you go into next offseason thinking that, you know, Travis Etienne is a guy that can get you 1,000 on the ground and 500 through the air, and James Robinson can get you 800 on the ground. And if that happens, you're going to have a dynamic offense around Trevor Lawrence, regardless of how significant the upgrades are at receiver or tight end. So, I think that I don't think running back really has to be an area
at all.
Yeah, an area where they have to. If they wanted to bring Carlos Hyde back, I mean, I don't know what his I don't have his contract in front of me, so I don't know. But it can't be anything other than economical. So if that's the route they wanted to go, I think that's fine. They're going to have so many other needs that I think they can run it back with what they have at the backs position.
I'd like to see another good and part of it is because I don't think Carlos Hyde's a terrific player. Another good downhill runner. I think the Cardinals had Edmonds, but it really helped them that they went and got James Conner. The Ronald Jones was fine. He's a decent back, but obviously it helped them to get Fournette, who obviously is a high pick. But I think a second guy, if you're going to be good, I think a second guy like that matters. Until they got Jonathan Taylor, the Colts had two or three guys. I mean, Nyheim Hines is a really good third down back. But they had Marlon Mack. They had, I'm forgetting the other down. They had two. They had, before Jonathan Taylor.
Well, they had one guy run for 100 yards that has never been seen from.
So. Right, against the Jaguars. But, I mean,
Jordan Wilkins?
It was Jordan Wilkins.
Yeah, he's on the Jaguar practice squad, I think.
But they've had numbers. They've had numbers of guys. And so I think it's, for me, I think it'd be important to get numbers.
In a 17-game season, at some point in time, your running back is going to get hurt. Whether that's Etienne, whether that's James Robinson, at least nicked up. I don't mean seriously hurt, but at least nicked up. So, yes, I think they need a backup there. Hyde's contract, 2 years, $4.5 million.
Even with Kamara, who's a great player. And I may be talking out of turn, but didn't they have Ingram and Latavius Murray on the same team? Am I wrong about that?
The Saints?
Yeah. They never had all three of them together?
Murray replaced Ingram.
Okay.
That's what I think.
I know he replaced him for the carries, But I thought, for some reason, I thought they were on the team together. I could
maybe
be wrong about that.
I didn't think the Saints drafted Latavius Murray.
Yeah. No, they didn't. They didn't. So I
Look, I mean, there's a million running backs.
Yeah.
So if the Jaguars want to bring in some competition for Carlos Hyde, or I mean, look, I've got no problem if they cut Carlos Hyde. Yeah. I just don't think they will.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, to me, that's, you know, if they want to look at the second wave of free agency, if they want to invest, I don't know that I would draft one. But maybe if there's a guy sitting there in the fifth, sixth round that you just absolutely love, you take a flyer on him. But I think they're fine at running back. The big thing is they didn't have Travis Etienne all year.
Right.
And
I think a first round draft.
And
pick.
So then it just becomes, well, what do you think he is going to be? If you think Travis Etienne is a decent player, then it's not that big of a loss. If you think like me that Travis Etienne was going to be an absolute star immediately, then it's a major loss.
And to your point, Hayes, in fairness to your opinion on this, all during the pre-draft process, there was a debate whether Najee Harris or Travis Etienne was the better back.
Right.
I mean, it really came down to which draft analyst you asked. They went back and forth. Well, Najee Harris has been a terrific rookie.
Well, give me Najee Harris's numbers.
Correct. They're a different style back, but still.
But just the yards from scrimmage.
Yes.
And say that that's comparable to what Etienne would have done here.
On another limited offense.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he's had all these running lanes because they're throwing it downfield and lighting people up.
Yeah.
He has 708 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns.
What does he have through the air? If you don't mind checking.
I just have to click somewhere else.
He's a good player. You're right. If Etienne was here doing what Harris did there, and again, the Steelers are better than the Jags. They're not that much better because the Steelers are as average as it gets. That's as average a team this year. I mean, they got to blow it. Of the teams that got to blow it up, they don't have to blow it up very often. They got to blow it up.
They do.
They've got
351 yards through the air and 2 additional receiving touchdowns.
So he's got 1,050 yards.
Over 1,000 yards. And 7 touchdowns.
So let's just say Travis had 900 yards. Let's say he didn't have Harris's impact.
Right.
But he had 900 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Right.
Well, that would feel like Barry Sanders with what we've been watching for the first 11 games.
Before we break, who are you throwing the ball to Sunday on the left coast, Brooks? Kayvon Austin caught one in the back of the end zone. Did that do anything for you?
I thought it was a great catch, but as far as the guy who I think is developing into the most chemistry, it's James O'Shaughnessy after just one game of being back. And then receiver-wise, the guy that Hayes interviewed yesterday, Laquon Treadwell.
Hold the thought on Treadwell. Let me start with O'Shaughnessy. What a shame that Arnold got hurt. I mean, talk about your team feeling cursed. You finally got one that maybe you got one over on everybody. You know, they haven't.
Same with Agnew.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, good.
You got one over on everybody, and then boom.
Yeah, yep. But with Arnold, you really did. Jamal Agnew made some plays in the passing game, but even before he got hurt, I didn't find myself thinking he was going to ever be a high volume receiver. Dan Arnold, I did. I started thinking Dan Arnold was going to be a 5 or 6 catch, 80 yard guy. Didn't you think that? Like game in and game out.
Yeah.
And I thought, and God, well, you're right though, Agnew too. You just feel cursed. I like the idea of some balls toward Treadwell. He's not the fastest guy, but he's a body control guy. He's a physical guy. He goes up and gets the ball. I loved his interview with you. Very, very grounded guy.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really, really, really good. So
I thought the guy would be Marvin Jones before the season based off of what we saw in training camp. And just I thought his polished receiver or his polished routes, because he's been a receiver in this league for so long. But he's not been good.
You know what it is, Lauren? He's not been bad. He doesn't have the physical attributes of today's star receiver. He's not real physical, and he's not real fast.
He doesn't always catch the ball. I'd be okay with that if you always caught the ball.
Yeah, but he'll catch. I don't worry about his hands. He's dropped some. I don't worry about his hands. But he's not real. In this league, you got to be one or the other. If you're not physical, LaVisca Chenault's physical at least. The chance he's got to be a good player in the league is he is going to be a very physical receiver. And I still have hope for LaVisca when the passing game's working, when there's rhythm, when there's better players around him. I think he'll have an impact somehow, some way on this team. Does he become a running back like Cordero Patterson? I don't know, but he does something.
That's what he should do.
Yeah, and might be. That's what he looks like. That's what he looks like, just like Patterson did. But I don't know that Marvin, just physical attributes, physicality or speed, if you have neither, you know, it's one of the reasons I always thought Keelan Cole was just going to be okay. You know, Keelan Cole looked so great when he got here in 17, But at the end of the day, he wasn't the fastest guy and he wasn't the most physical guy. So he becomes – Keelan Cole is kind of a younger Marvin Jones Jr., isn't he?
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, I mean, I think Marvin Jones is a three in this league, and he's having to be a one, which isn't fair to him. It's just – I mean, he's not going to complain about it. That's the role that just, you know, through attrition has happened. But he's not suited for it. You know, Marvin Jones would be great if next year you re-signed DJ Chark, you signed – Davante Adams, you drafted Olave in the second round or wherever, or whoever your receiver of choice is, and Marvin Jones is like your fourth guy. Yep. Then you've got something. But as your one, it's going to be tricky. So, yeah, I think I agree with Lauren. I think you're going to see a lot of O'Shaughnessy and Treadwell, and Marvin will get his targets. But I think in terms of guys that haven't played a ton or haven't gotten a lot of opportunities yet, I think – O'Shaughnessy and Treadwell are going to be the guys against the Rams.
We'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to get into this baseball lockout thing, and our friend Brett Hastings will be by to talk a little bit about labor law. I don't understand labor law. I mean, can the baseball owners come out and say, we're going to have a salary cap, and the hell with you if you don't like it? I know they can't do it when there's a CBA in place, but it almost seems like the players are going to sue them if they say we want to do this. It's bizarre, yet there's no CBA. And so I've got to boat up about this, we'll talk about it. It's after this. We're live at Dome Hats. Come on back. Little song called Jessica today. Allman Brothers on Old Rock Thursday. Frank Franti, Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks, live from Dome Hats here on Third Street. Fred Hastings joins us now. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good.
Good to see you.
Glad to have you guys in Jack's Beach.
Oh, love it. Is the weather always like this when you come out here? Like, just perfect?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just perfect all the time. I'll tell you, one time I went into this Publix right here, a couple blocks away, and it was before he passed, and it was Greg Allman.
Really?
No
yeah,
way.
And I was looking at him, and I thought it was, and this guy walks up and goes, did you think that was Greg Allman? Because it is. And I said, okay.
Yeah. By the way, I got a tweet from our friend John from FanCam. John, thank you for the tweet. You're the best. He said, Jax is the home of the Allman Brothers, formed on March 23rd, 1969 on Riverside Avenue. I think, actually, it is kind of the first time they ever gathered, they were. But they really built the band in Macon, John. So I can.
Well, we're going to claim it.
So. I don't know much. I know very little, but I study this band stuff because it's like one of my hobbies. So they actually formed the band. The foundation of the band is in Macon. But you're right. It's the first time they ever got together at any one point was here in Jacksonville. So there you go.
That's
so
awesome.
That is
being home to really good bands.
I want to get to the baseball thing in a minute because it's got me ticked off, and I want you to guide me to it. But before, we are 2 weeks today from a very special day, aren't we?
Best day of the year. Yeah. You know, we do our toy drive to benefit Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You know, I think our listeners have heard us say it in the past, but what's phenomenal about this is that, you know, like 90-95% of the kids, as Sarah Alford, the CEO, will tell everybody, these are the only toys that they get.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know how many years we've done it yet.
Oh, I've got to go count it up. I was thinking about that today, too. I don't know either.
I think next year will be the 10th.
That's probably about right.
And, you know, every year it gets bigger. And, you know, you said to me a number of years ago when you were like, hey, let's do this together. And I was like, what if nobody brings any toys?
Right.
You know? And,
we did say that.
And you said, listen, trust me on this one. And I said, all right, well, let's do it. And I trusted Frank. And we didn't know how to get the toys out of there. But he goes, what's great about this, and you're going to see it, Brett, is it really restores your faith in humanity. And it does, you know. And so Christmas Day with your family is phenomenal. But I don't know if I don't like this day more. And it's amazing how many people come in, drop off toys. They don't ask for anything. They just come in and out. I can't tell how many people we get phone calls during the week at the law firm. You know, I've met people coming back from court over the years, and they put toys into the car and shake your hand and do it. So, it means so much to these kids, but I don't know that, like, we don't get more out of it anyways.
Yeah,
so.
And I will tell you this, when Brett and I first had this conversation, and I was confident it would do well, I didn't have all that much confidence in me. I'm not sure I had all that much confidence in you, but I had a lot of confidence in the people of the city, and because people are good. And we saw it yesterday with the Tom Coughlin, Jay Fun Hayes, and then again, it's a magical day. We're going to do it at the Ale House, Hodges and Beach.
Right, and you know, really, we talked to a number of people, and they wanted it to be back there.
Yeah.
And at that location, I think pretty much everybody in Jacksonville knows, but you've got a Target and a Walmart right behind. That's the beauty. And listen, we want unwrapped toys because of the way that they're distributed with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So go in and grab this stuff. You know, obviously, whatever toys, you know, you kind of feel like you want to give – are fantastic. We like, you know, sports related types of toys so that we get kids outside, and we think it, you know, kind of obviously is married real well with this program and our association with it. But, you know, I have a neighbor and they don't have any kids.
Yeah.
And every year they go and they buy like three or four bicycles and they go, you know what, we're going to get, they go have a couple drinks.
Right.
Love it.
The Wagners, Jeff and Diane Wagner. So I'll put a shout out to them. And they go and have a drink or two, and they go shopping because they don't have kids to shop for. And yeah. Every year I'm, like, blown away with it. And every year I'm like, how are we going to get those in the back of the RV? Because they like to show up kind of at the end, you know, have some fun while they're shopping.
Right.
But there are people like that, and they build traditions around it. So, yeah, it's fantastic, and just huge thank you to everybody. And we're out of this pandemic, and we're going to full stadium. So let's really just kick some butt on this year's toy drive. And I just want to have more toys than ever.
And one of my favorite things is hearing from Sarah and the team at Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida on how they distribute it. The kids get to come in and they get to pick whatever they want. And that is just, you know, you can just envision their faces just lighting up when they see all those toys.
Again, to Brett's point, a kid that ordinarily wouldn't have a toy.
Right. And I took a video at Big Brothers Big Sisters last year. We'll make sure to get it up on social media here this week, and it'll blow you away. And the way they put them in and section it, and then the children come through, and the reason that they're not wrapped is they match up, you know, the things that they like with the children, and they almost have an opportunity to shop and get them. And you know, it blows you away how excited they are. So
yeah, I can't wait. It's a great event. Wanted to ask you about the lockout in baseball. We hear the term collusion a lot. How does that work once the lockout has started? Because aren't the owners allowed to be sort of in lockstep together?
Yeah,
or is collusion still a thing?
Yeah, it's not so much collusion. Like, let's just talk in the big picture, because I'm sure this will be a story that we do a little bit. But we'll get to the fundamentals, right? You hear about a collective bargaining agreement. What is that? It's a master contract, okay? So, like, 99% of the people that are listening to us, you know, they don't make this big money like Frank Frangie or have a contract with 1010XL or some of his other entities and have those protections within the contract. Well, when you become a pro baseball player, pro football, or whatever, you're part of a union, right? And so there's a master contract. And so when we hear about these guys making money and doing stuff, these agents don't really do much, okay? Because really the only terms that you negotiate for the individual player, right, are how much over how many years. Because there's this master contract that comes up, whatever, 4, 5, 6 years. And in it, it's, hey, if you test positive for drugs, what type of arbitration procedure do you get? What type of medical benefits do you get? You know, how can you be terminated? What are your due process rights? What are all of those things? Well, what goes on is, how do you split up the money between the owners and all that? All of those things are bargain terms. So right now, we just got to the end of this contract, and what do we know? We know that there's strength in numbers, right? So the players got to hang together so that they have the most amount of leverage they have, and the owners are going to do the same thing, and they're going to go in there, and it's like, what do we see in the NFL? I think the players got hosed on the deal a little bit, but what happened was the veterans got a great deal, right? And the rookies didn't. And so now you see these types of things go on because you see the leadership for the players.
Yeah.
Are they looking out for the rookies? Probably not.
But Hayes' question's a good one. Now that there's no CBA in place, can there be collusion? Is collusion? Because that's a great question. If there's, can't all 30 owners get together and say we're doing this or we're not doing that? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what they're going to do, and that's what I was trying to say. They're just bargaining together. Now, all bets are off. So, I mean, I'm not as big a baseball nerd as Frank Frangie, who just had the biggest contract, but just tell me, who just got the biggest contract?
Who's the latest?
Scherzer got a massive one, $23.5 million a year.
Yeah. Right. Well, you don't get $23.5 million in the years when you're hanging with the bros and not going to the game, right? When you're hanging with the guy that gets $600,000.
So I read something today.
But they will hang together because without each other.
Solidarity on both sides. I read something today that puzzled me, and maybe I didn't read it right. But it said, if the owners say we're going to have a salary cap, that's it. Every other sport in North America has a cap. We can't be the only ones getting it right, and they're all getting it wrong. We're going to have a cap. We're going to have a floor, and we're going to have revenue sharing because they all go together. I read something today, Brett, that said the players could then sue them for not dealing in good faith because they've said in the past we won't have a cap. Is that true? I mean, and again, it's just one story.
Well, it's one of those things you can – I mean, what is collusion, right? It's secretive, sort of illicit deals that are going on. I don't know that this is secretive, no. Okay? I think these are legitimate, bargained terms. I mean, when we get to collusion, we are trying to, quote, create, right, the outside image of good faith bargaining, and the deal's already done, right? Things go through it. You know, the idea that we'll have an open public hearing, we'll hear from people before they vote, and deals are done, and they're cut, and contracts are signed, you know, whatever. That's collusion. I think here, these terms are fair. Now, when we go and look at things to say, you know, is this a monopoly? You know, like we've said it for years, sports are monopolies, right? Sports are antitrust violations. There are opportunities to go and to challenge those things. But that would be litigation, I mean, that goes on for a long time or other things that happen. So I think right now what we're going to see is we're going to see everybody get entrenched. We're going to see some uncertainty. You know,
and then you're
such
agree.
A well. You're such a passionate baseball guy, right? My son's 16. He came up here to do this appearance. He watches no baseball games.
Right.
Neither do his brothers. And I think baseball is dying in some respects. And one of the big things that they are trying to negotiate as part of this contract is to make baseball quicker, more watchable.
Agreed.
You know, have these things. I think this will get worked out. Okay. Because this isn't the NFL. And the NFL, goes out and creates a gigantic, right, political whole thing. People kneeling this or that, but it survives through because even the people that are just that entrenched still want to watch the NFL because it's the hottest topic and thing. I think that the players know that. I think that the ownership in baseball knows that. I think they know they need to energize the sport. And ultimately, I think that will bring the parties together to negotiate in a little better faith, right, and to work through these things. Well, because I don't think baseball could make it through a long-term lockout and no baseball next year.
Well, let me tell you this. You're dead on, 100% correct, and that's the problem. The players know that the owners can't shut it down. For the reason you said, it's already, you don't have the young people anyway.
Right.
But because of what I would do, I'll tell you what I would do. I would say, we can't be the only sport in North America without a salary cap. There's a reason they all have it.
Right.
It's got, the people in Kansas City and Pittsburgh and Seattle have to have just as good a chance to win as the people in L.A., Boston, and New York. And if they don't, our sport is going to continue to die, and we're going to continue to have trouble selling tickets. So for that reason, that's it. We're having a salary cap, and that's it. And if it takes us 2 years to play again, we're not going to play for 2 years. But baseball's afraid to do that. And the players, by the way, it would be you'd miss a season. You will miss at least a season. I mean, a full season, because the players are going to – but then after that, after 1 year, the players are going to go, okay. They're dug in here. Do we want to miss another – you'd miss one full season of baseball. And the owners are afraid to do it for the reasons you just said.
Right. And, you know, sports are different, right, than, you know, this accounting firm that I'm looking at across the street here on 3rd Street. So as a general rule, caps are disfavored in the law. I think they work in sports, right? But if you're just, like, legally looking at it or looking at collusion or how to do this, those are things that would generally be disfavored. We'd say we have a free market capitalist economy, let the best man win, right? But obviously you see all the things that we do to break up large media groups and other things once we start getting to those antitrust violations. So I think on legal grounds, not having a salary cap, you know, just philosophically, ideologically, probably comports more with the law. But I agree with you. Yeah. I think that's the trend, you know, of where it's going to go. And, you know, Prosser hates me. But, you know, I'm a diehard Braves fan. I start watching, like, halfway through the championship series, you know, and I get real into it.
I wear
my Braves hat, you know. But that's the way I look at baseball.
It was a great season.
It was. That was the best 10 days, man. I was sweating it out.
The best 10-day season ever.
By the way, would you take that? Would you take 1 year of no baseball to get the salary cap? That's what I thought.
Well, I'd take 2 years. I'd take as long as it took. Because, now again, I'm biased. I have a small market, small dollar team, so it benefits my team.
Sure.
So the better question is, Frank, if you were a Yankees fan, would you feel the same way? I don't know that because I'm not a Yankees fan. I can't ever answer that.
I'll tell you that.
But I think it's for the best. I think baseball can't – if everybody else does it to keep parity in your sport, baseball can't be so arrogant that they think we're getting it right. They can't. Can they? I mean – but they are.
They are.
Yeah.
I just have one quick question.
What's that?
Can Gator fans file a class action lawsuit against Dan Mullen for our season being so disappointing.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we're going after some of that $12 million,
we
Dan.
We could probably win. Well, you know what that was? You got to show up till you're fired, man. If that didn't look like a guy who was just like,
showing
hey, I'm showing fight. Up, and right. I'm walking through, and he met all his obligations, and they had to come in and terminate
but
him.
But he attacked the end of that game against Missouri in regulation so aggressively.
Yeah. Unbelievable. One more time, the toy drive. 2 weeks from today, that's the next time we'll have Brett will sit in with us.
Miller's Ale House, Hodges.
Hodges and Beach Ale House. Technically 4 to 7, but we'll be there on the air at 3. You can come early if you want.
That's right.
Bring a toy for a kid. It's a big deal. We'll talk more about it in the 2 weeks leading up to it.
Brent, we got some finger food, other drinks and stuff that, you know, we go ahead and treat these people too that come out and help bring the toys.
Yeah, as we wrap here.
Unwrapped toys.
As Brett has always said, one of the coolest things about it, Brett has always said, I'm going to buy a beer for anybody that brings a toy. Said that 10 years ago. Nobody wants your beer. Because people come up and say, Brett, thank you. I can buy my beer.
Right.
But they want to help the kids. They're not there to get a free beer.
And if
beer
you want a Diet Coke like Frangie, yeah, I mean, he usually hits me for like 12 to 14 of those things.
I've had about five already today. We're just getting started. Brett, thanks, buddy. We appreciate it. More in a moment. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM. Holman Brothers today on Old Rock Thursday. Glad you're with us. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks. Live from Dome Hats. You want a hat, boy, Dome Hats. Go on to dome.com, domehats.com. You'll find out the terrific, terrific stuff they do here. Man, they are a good hat company. They know what they're doing. Stop by and say hello to all of us and our friends here at Dome Hats. You guys ready for Loser Monday?
Well, that's one of the best songs ever, by the way.
That is.
But, yes, now I'm ready for Loser Monday, thanks to Midnight Rider.
I'm nervous. I'm very nervous.
Well, here's the way the standings look is this. You should be okay. I think you're going to avoid that. You wore the hat last year.
Well, I just mean, like, this particular exercise.
Gibby's only lost once all year. He looks like he could – by the way, Gibby could
– complete crapshoot is why.
Gibby could close it out after – Gibby doesn't lose today. He's in the clear, okay?
That's right.
Gibby would have to lose all three of the remaining ones to wear the hat. Then he'd just be tied for wearing the hat. Hayes is at 2 losses. He's pretty much in the clear. So I think he's good. Brooks and I are the real losers. We both lost 4 times. And I got a hunch one of us is going to be wearing the hat.
I do, too.
But wouldn't it be great if it was Lawrence? Because she always knows how to do it. Yeah, I mean, you have experience. I mean, it'll be new to me.
Just because Dome Hat sponsors me does not mean I want to wear the loser hat.
All right. So this week's Dome Hats, this week's a Loser Monday, looks like this.
You can sponsor that, too.
You have to pick a quarterback touchdown passes thrown in a championship game this weekend in college football. Everyone knows the rules. If it's any championship game, you guys wanted any championship game, right?
That we did. So, we fought for it tooth and nail.
Yes, you
did. We almost literally had a fight in the studio.
Yeah,
the other day.
Yeah. Hayes is suing me because he didn't get to pick first, even though he lost last time. So,
how many of these quarterbacks' names did you learn in your preparation, Frank Frangie, before we
about
began?
Half.
Okay.
I mean, being honest, about half.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you?
18 of them.
About half.
You were halfway through telling us what it was, and I was convinced it was NFL. And I was like, so I was blindsided that it ended up being all these minor conference games.
I will say.
Then I was blindsided that my number one pick was ripped out of my organizational hands.
By the way, even before you get cheated on the rules, the look on your face when you go, oh, it's not NFL. That was the best look ever.
Yeah.
And I was laughing.
You mean I've actually got to do research on Northern Illinois?
Because Frank was saying, the conferences, still, Hayes, I could tell, was like, so it's going to be NFL.
Right.
You
never processed this. Let's get right to it. Lauren, you have the first pick. It's what that serpentine, whatever they call it. You go first. Who do you like?
Yeah, I do think.
Oh, I love the music.
I do, too. Well done, Gibby. I do think the first pick is tricky. I have gone between two guys back and forth.
Okay.
I will tell you who I settled on in a second, but I will tell you the reason I went back and forth is because of the defenses that these two quarterbacks are playing. I think they're going to tear it up. Give me Kenny Pickett of Pittsburgh, number one overall.
I love that pick. I loved it, loved it.
And I won't tell you who my other guy was in case nobody picks him.
He's had the flu, but I love the pick.
The flu could be a problem for me.
I'm coming right with you, same game. I'm going to go Sam Hartman from Wake Forest. And I was going to pick one of those two guys. Hayes Carline from the Bowl School.
With the third pick.
With the third pick.
God almighty, I can't believe that. Well, I will say this. I mean, we're at, the draft actually fell to us in a good way.
Says that every time.
To me, it's you know, I I'm going to take the guy that's thrown 52 touches.
All right.
Give me the zapper. Western Kentucky.
He was the other guy that I was considering at the top.
I just couldn't make myself do it.
I just couldn't make myself do it.
So Bailey Zappe is your guy. Gibby, you got two picks.
We don't know how to pronounce his name.
I know one of them.
You do?
Yeah, Gibby, go. Two picks.
Bryce Young's still available, correct?
Yes, he is.
I'll take Bryce Young. And I'll go with another Bryce, Chase Bryce.
I was going to say. If you didn't go Chase Bryce, I would be so, so very disappointed in you. I'm going to go Desmond. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Back
you're
to
up.
Hayes.
Uh-oh.
Hayes,
back to me.
Do it.
Damn it.
Do it.
I messed
no,
up.
No. You're good. You're good. I got to look and see what I want to do here now. All righty. I am going to take.
By the way, was this the most research, as you think about it, was this the most research any of y'all have had to do for a Loser Monday, besides maybe the draft?
I literally knew nothing besides about any of these teams.
Okay.
and I'm still kind of stuck a little bit, to be honest.
You can have this.
I have 5 minutes to make this pick until I to turn the card
up? You got a Billy Napier there. Why don't you take his guy?
Yeah,
you say you like the Gators. No.
Or you can take the guy Frank was clearly going to pick.
Yeah.
You know what? I would deserve that.
Yes,
though.
You know what? I'm going to stay in the same game that I picked the first guy. I'm going to take Frank Harris.
Frank Harris.
I will not spoil your draft plan, Frank.
So that is UTSA's Frank Harris for people who have no idea who that is.
Yeah, I didn't either. I'll take Desmond Ritter. Lauren, you have two picks.
Yes. I will go with Utah State's Logan Bonner.
Dang it.
And I will also go with.
This is your game. Why are you laughing?
It is. I kind of miscalculated. It is. Okay. That wasn't really the idea, but okay. We got it. Yeah. And who else?
And I will also go with Houston's Clayton Toon.
Pickett, Bonner, and Toon are your
pick. Pickett, Bonner, and Toon. Let's go, boys. You sound like a band.
All right.
He's going to pick it. He's going to Toon.
All right. I am going to take.
Wasn't the idea, he says.
No, I wouldn't have to take one of those. I'm not taking one of those guys. I'd rather lose. I'm going to take.
Yes, that is what I want to hear. I would rather you lose as well.
Yeah, it's. I'm going to take Clayton Toon.
I just took him. You weren't paying attention.
Oh, you said Toon. My bad. I'm going to take.
I feel better now. I took forever, but at least I picked somebody on the board.
Dang it.
I shouldn't have told you, and you just could have gotten 0 points for
it. Oh, no, I'm keeping score. I would have been 0 points. Trust me.
I mean, it wouldn't if I hadn't told you.
I'm going to take this is kind of my game, isn't it? All right, I'll take Levi Lewis.
All right.
Hayes Carline.
All right. Well, I had never heard of this guy until about 5 hours ago.
Right.
Kent State has a young man named Dustin Crum. He's the MAC
player of the year.
I will take Kent State's Dustin Crum and the MAC championship game, which now I have to pay attention to.
Give me your next.
Welcome to my world.
I'm surprised that nobody's picked a quarterback from this this Big 12 game. Because they just score a ton of points. I'm going to go with Spencer Sanders, Oklahoma State quarterback.
So there you go. Let me just say, kind of the idea of this was we take either the SEC, ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, Big 10. That was kind of, and I said, well, let me throw in the Louisiana App game because that'll be fun.
Yes.
At no point was it supposed to go to Utah State in Western Kentucky.
Utah State's quarterbacks got like 50 touchdowns.
It was never supposed to go to that. So this is a very poorly conceived Loser Monday. But I thought, okay, one will take the Michigan, and they'll take the Georgia. And then Michigan and Georgia didn't get picked. So there you go. A bunch of guys you've never heard of. We'll see why I'm winning at the end of this thing.
Well, we were, doing strategy.
Yeah, I thought about Stetson Bennett, but
He doesn't
even have 2,000 yards.
One person takes Stetson Bennett, one person takes the Michigan, and one person takes the.
That would be Cade McNamara. Yes. But see, it's tricky to take Michigan because they rotate quarterbacks sometimes.
That's kind of the idea. That's kind of where we were going to go with
that. Well, we could rip this up
and
start again.
We're good.
And we'll limit it to six games.
We're good.
At 4:40, we're redoing the whole thing.
We're good. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these other college games. Stay with us. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Brooks, I think you know this one.
That I do.
I would say.
Such a great song.
Good song.
They all are. They're all fantastic. Tens out of ten.
Allman Brothers on Old Rock Thursday. Glad you're with us live from Dome Hats. This is the place to get your hats, and the word is out. People get hats. You buy it from your company. You buy it from your team. You go to Dome Hats to get them. We're here at the Dome Hats location on 3rd Street, just off of Beach Boulevard, a little bit south of Beach Boulevard. I'm watching the ACC, and I know it's just 1 year. It reminds me of the year that Wake and Georgia Tech played here. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, no knock on Wake or Georgia Tech, and this year no knock on Wake or Pitt. But the ACC doesn't need that.
It's an atrocious matchup.
Certainly for the optics of it, you know.
It'd be a fun game. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah,
but I mean, fun game, atrocious.
If Clemson and Miami had these same players, it would feel like a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Same exact players. But I think they'll never tell you this, but the ACC, in the worst way, wants Clemson, FSU, and maybe Miami to come back. And this game underscores that more than any. Other than that Wake Georgia Tech game that was played here in the rain, and really underscores that, I think.
Even like Virginia Tech, you know, who's at least played for a national championship in the last 20 years. I mean, you know, it's just Wake Forest. It's just they're a great story. It's a tremendous academic institution. But from a football standpoint, it just has no cachet at all. No one is going to get excited to turn on the TV and watch Wake Forest unless you're a fan of Wake Forest. And Pitt, I can't even wrap my head around that they're an ACC school. Like, it just doesn't feel like it feels like a Thursday night non-conference week one throwaway game instead of a conference title game. Now, I do think it's going to be really exciting. There's going to be points galore. There's going to be tons of touchdown passes with Pickett and Hartman. Fun game, but just from a logo standpoint and a tradition standpoint, I mean, your competitor has Georgia, and you're answering with Pitt Wake.
Yeah, I understand all of that, but I think people who tune in will be just absolutely thrilled and super entertained. I think the game itself is going to be one that people are left talking about. I feel like it could almost go to overtime, and it's just, I think the game itself is going to be exciting. You've got two coaches that have done tremendous jobs this year. But I understand, yes, from the TV rating standpoint, as far as in comparison to any other conference champion, not any other, but other conference championship games, not as good. Yeah, the Big Ten certainly has them as well.
What about the Big Ten game? Obviously no one knows much about Iowa, but I almost...
Don't ask me, or don't say that around me, O'Brien.
I almost sensed it in a weird sort of way. America's pulling for underdog Michigan, which sounds crazy, but because they haven't beaten Ohio State in 100 years until this year, because they're going to be a decided underdog if they get to the Georgia game and the championship game. I never thought Jim Harbaugh in Michigan would be America's darling, and I know I'm reaching a little bit by calling him that, but you know what I mean? I think I'm rooting for Michigan because I think the playoffs will be better if they're in it.
I agree, and I'm excited to see their defensive ends. They're really exciting players.
Aiden Hutchinson's a great player.
Yeah, and you know, to see what they could do in the playoff, I think would be cool. Michigan to me has a little bit of a feel, and this is going to probably make Michigan fans puke, and it's definitely going to make Ohio State fans puke. But I'm sorry, it's just when I look at them, this is sort of what I'm reminded of. Michigan reminds me of the Ohio State team with Maurice Claret that upset Miami. Now, they shouldn't have won the game. Miami got hosed on a call late.
But it's a great comparison.
But they kind of remind me of that team that's just sneaking up on people and sneaking up, and then you're going to look up and they're going to be the national champion.
Very similar to that team.
I think
quarterback for that team, please.
Oof, it was Krenzel?
Craig Krenzel. Can't get that. You can't come inside on Carline. Well done.
You certainly cannot. I don't think that game is going to be that much fun to watch, Michigan-Iowa, just from a watching perspective. Iowa's defense is really good. Michigan, both their offense and defense are really good. So I think, unfortunately for people, there's a reason you don't know much about Iowa. It's because it's mainly a defensive team.
But I agree with you, Hayes. I think Michigan could be that team that's not supposed to win it, but could break the heart of the team that is supposed to win it, which is Georgia. They could be like that. That's a great comparison.
Especially if Haskins continues to go up.
And Miami was, A, better than that Ohio State team. And, B, there was a bad call. Terry, what was the official's name? Terry.
I don't remember.
It was Terry's first name. Terry, the Miami fans will all know. Joe, you'll send me a text or a tweet.
Yeah.
Terry, somebody or another, did he call interference or didn't call the interference?
He called interference.
He called interference.
I mean, Miami sidelines running off to celebrate a title.
Right.
And if you're watching, and I was just watching it on TV, and it was like, oh, my.
Terry Porter. That's what it was. Terry Porter.
Okay.
Good. Terry Porter was the name of the official.
Yeah. And so it was, you can't make that call.
Yeah.
You cannot make that call. And it's unfortunate because it cost Miami a national title. Again, I'll say that, and Michigan will lose to Iowa. But it sort of feels like they're a team that is starting to figure it out. We've made a lot of fun of Jim Harbaugh and his struggles.
Right.
But in terms of resume, credentials, this is not somebody who's going to get out-coached.
Great point.
In this environment. He's coached in Super Bowls.
No matter how much we've made fun of the khakis and some of the things he says, he's a good coach. He's a really good coach. Speaking of good coaches, Mario Cristobal is a good coach. Does that game have any juice at all? The Oregon-Utah game, it doesn't feel like there's much juice to it, does it?
I don't think so. And, again, this isn't Utah's fault. And Florida's going to encounter this a little bit next year. Utah doesn't have a lot of pizzazz.
Yeah.
But they're a really strong program. Like, if you lose to Utah, your friends are going to make fun of you for losing to Utah. But in actuality, like, Utah has a really good football program and has done really well since Urban Meyer left them. Utah destroyed Oregon. And, I don't have a lot, particularly now that I don't have either one of these quarterbacks in the bet. I won't watch it.
Redraft.
I have very little interest in watching it. But Utah, to me, is they're almost like a Wisconsin. They're a team that they don't have a lot of sizzle, but, man, they show up every year and they win their 8 or 9 games, or in a year like this, maybe even more.
One more reason why it is such a big deal for the Pac-12 to get Lincoln Riley. Because that they thought when they got Chip Kelly that would be a thing. It wasn't a thing. Nobody even knows UCLA exists. And Stanford had their little run under David Shaw. They've gotten bad. So there's no more Stanford. UCLA never came back. I couldn't even tell you UCLA's record. I couldn't tell you if they're good, bad, middle of the pack.
Did they even make a bowl? Are they like 5-7?
I'm not sure.
I mean,
this is fourth.
Well,
year
they beat
now.
LSU, so maybe they went to their bowl.
And this is fourth year now. He and Mullen, Scott Frost all went in there together.
That's right.
You know, so and I could.
UCLA was 8-4.
Okay, 8-4. Okay,
they finished with a 3-game win streak.
And I had no idea.
Yeah,
I mean, on the national landscape, other than USC hiring Lincoln Riley. Is anything of note, and Oregon beating Ohio State. Oregon beating Ohio State early in the year was certainly a benchmark moment for them. But other than that, I can't think of when's the last time there was a football moment that resonated with or had to do with the Pac-12. A
Gardner
football
Minshew?
I guess, but wouldn't be talking about that if he didn't come here.
Yeah, you know? I was going to say, like, Chip Kelly's Oregon run.
Yeah, probably the Mariota.
I mean, if you're talking about the national, like,
was he the Mariota's coach?
He was.
Okay.
I think Chip. I think he left. Maybe that might have been Herzlick.
Yeah.
But Chip had the run.
Chip
was like 46
4. Actually, Chip was doing the TV pregame, so it would have been Herzlick. But he built it. Yeah.
I mean, they had an unbelievable record.
But that's the last time the Mariota Oregon. Is the last time there's been anything of significance with Pac-12 football ever? I mean, I'm trying to think. That was 7-8 years ago, right? Mm.
I think Washington maybe had a year where they were like playoff.
They did
kind of, but
they were in the playoffs.
But that was
they were,
and they got
I don't even remember,
and they got embarrassed. And
I'll tell you,
we did talk about Minshew. At least I remember before he was the Jaguars quarterback because he led the nation in passing, and we didn't expect him to go to Washington State and Mike Leach and all that stuff.
I knew the story, and I remember he put the fake mustache on Leach at the end.
But you're talking about national championship implications,
or I'm just talking about a story that resonated. I mean that story was fun for me. That story was fun. If Gardner Minshew had not landed in Jacksonville, I'd have had trouble remembering his name. Who was the guy? Remember the guy that put the mustache? For me, I'd have been going, who did the mustache? I mean that. So I mean Gardner Minshew became a big story because of what happened here. But the point is there's not a lot. I'm trying to think.
What about, the Pac-12 this year could have the number one pick, Kayvon Thibodeau.
And you know what? That's a great point. When come draft time, but it didn't resonate as a football game. But you're right. Come draft time, we'll all be talking about
it. Because he didn't play in the win over Ohio State.
That's right. He didn't. So, and they, but anyway, getting Lincoln Riley, We talked about the ACC's relevance. Getting Lincoln Riley will be a big thing.
They'll be in that game every year.
And they'll be talked about.
Yeah.
They'll be in the game. They'll be talked
about.
They'll
be in the game as the second team, ranked second in the country.
See, never underestimate what Clemson's emergence did for that conference. You knew they had FSU. And when FSU went bad, oh, boy, what were they going to – and Miami has been bad since – has been irrelevant since 2002. Clemson made that league relevant. Clemson made people pay attention. Clemson, I don't want to say saved ACC football. That's too dramatic. But you know what I mean? Clemson brought them
– Put the ACC on its back, for sure.
I mean, and people noticed. People noticed the ACC because of that.
By the way, USC's non-conference schedule in 2022, you can guess Notre Dame, Rice and Fresno State.
That's it.
So depending on how good of a team he's able to form quickly. But, I mean, other than Pac-12
games. When do they play
Notre
Dame? Is that announced?
November 26th.
So that's at the end.
Right after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And speaking of making news, the Notre Dame coach, Marcus Freeman, getting that job.
Yeah.
That is real. By the way, good for them. They hired a 35-year-old head coach, and they're keeping Tommy Rees as the coordinator, who's like 29.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Give them – I was convinced it was going to be Fickell. I thought they were going to wait on Fickell, and I thought he would crush it. I said that on the program yesterday. Now, I hope the players are right. You know, the thing that worries me about Freeman is he emerged so late. Is he really as good as it seems like he is now? Because if he is, that would be phenomenal. It's a young guy. It's an African-American hire. It's someone from the defensive side of the ball. All the things we're not getting enough of, it would be phenomenal for football. But I got to tell you, a year ago, I didn't know who he was. He was Cincinnati's defensive coordinator, but I didn't know. I didn't know until Notre Dame hired him.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago when Notre Dame fired its defensive coordinator. That's the last I remember about them even doing anything on defense.
Yeah, so anyway.
It's going to be a tough carousel, it looks like, for Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell, because OU's the only job that's still open and doesn't look like either one of them are getting it.
But I will say this to I agree with you, but I'll say this to those two. They seem to be just fine. They just seem to be just fine staying where they are. You know, they've both turned down jobs. They're both going to get another chance. The problem is the one job they both want, Ryan Day's like 12.
Right.
Okay, I mean Ryan Day just got there.
Yeah.
And he's not going anywhere.
And it doesn't seem like the NFL has a lot of interest
in
Ryan
doesn't because he's not an NFL guy.
Yeah.
I thought at first he might be, but he's not an NFL guy. And I don't know that Urban's lack of success so far. I mean, in fairness, Urban, he may turn it around and be very good down the road. I mean, Urban Meyer's a good football coach. But if he's not, that won't help Ryan.
Right.
Because the program seems the same.
What do you think will be the hot seats in 2022 as you spin it forward a little bit?
Haven't thought about that, but I'm trying to think which coaches of prominence.
Miami, I guess, if they retain Manny Diaz.
Yeah, Scott Frost for sure.
Yeah.
Manny for sure. Michigan. It would have been Michigan until this year.
Yeah, he's safe now.
But it would have been. He would have been.
I'm trying to think. SEC.
There's been so much turnover that it's hard to pinpoint.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, yeah, because
coaches on the hot seat.
Yeah, because the Florida and LSU guys just got it.
South Carolina, Kentucky love their guy. Tennessee loves its guy.
Brian Harsin's fine.
Mississippi State is new. Yeah, Auburn's new.
Yeah, Ole Miss, Mississippi. Leach and Kiffin aren't going to be on anybody's hot seat, but they could leave.
They could leave.
That's more a guy that could leave than a guy that's going to get pushed out. Yeah, you know what? There won't be much turnover in the league, you wouldn't think, next year unless a Kiffin or a Leach leave. You know,
that's what I would
think. If Clemson fails again next year, I'm not saying he should be, but is it possible Dabo Swinney could get on the hot seat?
It is a fickle world, isn't it? It's a fickle. I don't think so next year.
Look at what just happened to Eddie O.
Yeah. Of course, Eddie O had the off-field stuff, and Dabo's the best off-field. So I think Dabo.
At least now, that's
I don't think Dabo's headed to a hot seat anytime soon. But I don't know that anybody gets that lifetime contract that 2-3 years ago I would have thought Dabo would have gotten. I think that's changing, don't you? I mean, Saban's got it. I mean, Bobby Bowden didn't have
it.
Bobby Bowden wasn't protected.
Yeah. I would think Dabo would need 3 or 4 really average years.
I agree.
Before those conversations. And, I mean, again, unless something off the field happened, but that seems incredibly unlikely.
I will say this.
Oh, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah,
Texas head coach.
Good call. What are the
Texas head coach is constantly on the hot seat.
What are the expectations? I mean, what do you think of Clemson? Will we look up and Clemson's back to being 11-1 and ranked fourth. Is that coming back?
That's what I would bet more on instead.
Resistance?
I bet on that more than they're now going to be 9-3, 8-4.
Because of the resistance?
Because of the resistance. And they'd still recruit at such an elite
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
They may not have quarterback figured out right now, but it's going to be a prime portal destination if he chooses. He's been reluctant. And I think that's changing. I think Dabo, you're going to start to see his evolution of, you know what, this portal may not be bad for us.
Yeah.
We're pretty attractive. And they don't have a lot of recruiting misses, but if they can supplement with the portal to fix the few weaknesses that they have, I think they're still a very appealing university, tremendous program. I think, you know, a lot of people want to play for Dabo Swinney. So I would think Clemson is – I'll say this. I would be surprised. They're not going to win the ACC title this year. I would be surprised if Clemson doesn't win the next three ACC titles.
Okay. They're 10th in recruiting for 2022,
yeah.
And it's early, but in 2023, they're 25th.
And I'll tell you one thing he's done. He's kept his coordinators. Tony Elliott, and I mean, I know Jeff Scott was a co-coordinator, but Tony Elliott and Venables, by all accounts, are coming back yet again. So we'll see. All right, let's take a break. Our final Jimmy Himes of the year. We wrap up year number 27 of doing this together. In just a bit, I'll ask Jimmy for his Coach of the Year in the SEC, his Player of the Year in the SEC, his biggest surprises of the year in the SEC, both up and down, good surprises, bad surprises, and we'll talk about Alabama and Georgia getting together. That's next. Jimmy Himes after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Time now for Jimmy Himes, talking SEC football, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
It is time to talk SEC football. Jimmy Himes is the best in the business. Brought to you always by Underwood Jewelers. Jimmy, our last report of the year, this one kind of flew by this year. Didn't it feel that way? Did for me.
Yes, it did. Absolutely. Of course, it flew by a little bit faster for me because I wasn't covering a bad football team.
So that, good point.
That makes a difference. But you had to deal with a bad football team down there. But, yeah, it's the faster, the better the team you cover, the faster it goes, it seems.
Boy, that is a really good point. Right, let's talk some SEC football. We'll get to the championship game at the end of the broadcast and talk about who we think is going to win and all the details. But let's look back at the league. Biggest surprise to you in the league, whether someone worse than you thought they'd be, better than you thought they'd be, someone fired, not fired. What were your biggest surprise in the SEC this year?
The biggest positive surprise to me was Ole Miss. I didn't see him winning 10 games. Frank, that's the first 10-win regular season in Ole Miss history. I thought they'd be good. They were better than I thought. And, gosh, if I had to give a runner-up to that, I'd say Arkansas winning 8 games. Biggest surprise to me on the flip side was Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You come off winning the East Division. You play for an SEC championship. You lose a one-possession game to Alabama. And you've got a guy that's known as the quarterback guru, and he can't get that fixed. And the defense didn't show up at times. I thought Florida would be a whole lot better than 6-6. That's the biggest disappointment to me as far as a team I thought would do well.
It's really crazy, Jimmy, if you think about this. 2 years ago, Ed Orgeron coached maybe one of the best teams in the history of college football. 1 year later, Dan Mullen looked like he really had resuscitated Florida. They were 6 points away from beating this generational Alabama team. And a year after that, they're both fired. What a crazy time in college football, if you think about those two programs.
Yeah, there's no patience. We talk about fans not having patience. Administrators don't have patience either.
Right.
And I'll say this, in the case of LSU and Ed Orgeron, we had a Ron Higgins on who covers LSU, and he said that Ed Orgeron, after he won the national championship, just packed it in.
Yeah.
He was ready and took that big $17 million buyout and went down to his place down in Destin, and that's where he is. He said he just really didn't care after that. I don't think that happened with Mullen. I think Mullen made some decisions along the way that were a little bit quirky, and I think his team gave up on him whenever they didn't have anything else to play for. Once they were out of the East Division race, I mean, you can't lose to South Carolina and Missouri like that.
Right.
Those are teams that Tennessee ran off the planet, and Tennessee's not that good. So I think that Mullen lost his team and lost the fan base. And, boy, when that happens, we've talked about this, it's hard to recapture that, isn't it?
I think you're dead on. I think that recap you just gave is exactly right. Once there was nothing to play for, he lost the team, regardless of why that was, and we can talk forever about it. My theory always was, if quarterback play in this day and age is really bad and you don't change the quarterback, you're in big trouble. Steve Spurrier would have changed that quarterback 3 times this year. And I really think, Jimmy, that what went wrong for Florida is quarterback play went bad early. God bless Emory Jones, he tried. and Dan Mullen was reluctant to change it, was reluctant to pull him. I think that had everything to do with him losing that team.
Oh, I did too. And heck, even in the game they won against Florida State, which, by the way, I thought they would play hard against Florida State because that's an in-state rival.
Right.
But they win in spite of Emory Jones throwing three interceptions.
Correct.
My goodness. Just an amazing season. I just didn't see that happening at Florida this year.
All right. Coach of the year in the SEC. There are a lot of them. Coach of the year in the SEC on your ballot. Who would you pick?
I've gone back and forth on this. I actually have changed my mind of late, and I'm going to go Lane Kiffin because I didn't see Ole Miss setting a program record with 10 regular season wins, first time ever. I got Kirby Smart nipping at his heels. I think that Josh Heupel did a very good job. I'd have to mention him. Heck, I thought, look at Arkansas.
Right.
They'd lost 20 SEC games in a row, and then Pittman takes over, and in year two he wins 8 games. And he beat, I think, 4 ranked teams. I thought he did a tremendous job. Hey, I got to give Mike Leach some credit, too, at Mississippi State. They were picked to finish last in the league, and they ended up going 7-5. I thought he did a nice job. And then Stoops at Kentucky to win 9 games was a really good job. A lot of coaches did an outstanding job, but for Ole Miss to get to 10 wins, and their quarterback was banged up, and they were without 2 of their best receivers for much of the year, I'm going Kiffin.
That's a great choice. I probably would go Kirby. But there's no wrong choices there, and you did a great job of underscoring how much. Maybe that's what the problem was at Florida LSU. So many coaches in this league did a great job. Kiffin did a phenomenal job. I really think Josh Heupel. The reason I like what Heupel did so much is, and you're there every day, you see it, it's in your backyard. But from afar, I wondered if the Tennessee people had lost hope. They've been bad for so long. They've been historically bad. Tennessee is not used to being Vanderbilt, but Tennessee became Vanderbilt. And somebody had to lift them from that, Jimmy. And I think Heupel did a fantastic job. I would probably go Kirby a nose ahead of Kiffin. Boy, I'd have Heupel right in there, man. I think he did a great job with that Tennessee program.
If you were to redefine it and say which coach did the most with the least, that's Josh Heupel.
Yep.
Because when you look at it, and I'm not great at math, but my last calculation had Tennessee – since the start of last year with 46 players that could be on this roster right now that aren't.
Wow.
They've lost 40 to the transfer portal, 2 had to retire because of injuries, and 4 were let out of the national letter of intent. You think that's not a depleted roster?
Right.
And for him to do that, so I would vote him doing the most with the least if you had that category.
And I will tell you, I don't care. He inherited a program – that had nothing to do with him, that had lost 31 of 32 to Alabama and Florida. Think about that. I mean, that's what he inherited. The two biggest rivals on the schedule had lost 31 of 32. I mean, that's a generation, man. You know, if you think about that, and he walked right in there. So I think big things are ahead for Tennessee. I'd be surprised if they're not.
And they weren't beating Georgia either.
No, that's a good point. Good point. Offensive and defensive players of the year on your ballot, Jimmy.
Oh, wow. Offensive player of the year, that one is a really hard vote for me. I like Bryce Young a lot. I like Matt Corral a lot. I thought those two were just fantastic. Now, Bryce Young led that comeback against Auburn. That's good news for him that day. Up until then, he didn't play well at all. Matt Corral battled through 2 sprained ankles to get where he got. I'm going to lean slightly to Bryce Young in that vote, but it's close to me.
Yeah, really close for me. I'd probably go Corral, but it's really close. Defensively, Jordan Davis, is that who's your defensive guy of the year?
I've debated this one. I'm going to go Will Anderson because I think he impacted the game more. He had more sacks. He played more snaps. As good as Jordan Davis is, he rotated a lot. And a lot of times he didn't play on third down. So as great as I think Davis is, and he's going to be an all-pro in the NFL, I think Anderson impacted more games, in part because he played more snaps. So I'm going to go Will Anderson slightly over Jordan Davis.
Jimmy, let's talk about the new coaches in the league. Billy Napier to Florida, Scott Strickland, he was very decisive. I think he knew who he wanted, even when he was up there saying goodbye to Dan Mullen. I think Scott knew who he wanted. He made it clear it's the only guy he talked to. Napier wanted the job. He wanted him. That one was no surprise to anybody. Brian Kelly was a big surprise to me. I get the sense that Scott Woodward wanted Jimbo, wanted Riley, and settled for Kelly because he wanted another big name. How do you assess those two hires by Florida and LSU?
Well, you had told me last week that it was going to be Billy Napier, and so you made me look smart in Knoxville when I reported that.
Good.
There were two words that I saw under Napier's bio that made me think this is why. Those two words, elite recruiter.
Right.
And that is what Florida has missed out on. They've had good players now. Their roster is better than a lot of teams in the league. It's not better than Georgia's. It's not better than Alabama's. You can argue about A&M, and I just think he's got to get more good players in there. So I think recruiting, I think Dan Mullen fell off a little bit with that. I think I'm not so sure he didn't recruit still at the Mississippi State level and thought, I'm good enough where I can turn them into champions. I think you got to get better players, and I think Napier can do that. He's coached under Dabo Swinney. He's coached under Saban. He knows the recruiting landscape. He is coming from a smaller program now, but you know what? So did Steve Spurrier at Duke. So – and I say smaller program, a program that right. is not considered an elite-type football sure. power. So, but I think that's a really good hire. Kelly caught me off guard. I had been told by my LSU sources that they were really focused on Lincoln Riley more so than Fisher. Now, maybe that's because they knew they couldn't get Jimbo Fisher, mm-hmm. but they were focused on Riley. So Riley says, I'm not going to LSU. Right. He's going to eat Southern Cal. And as soon as that happened, I thought Dave Aranda was the next in line. Instead, they go to Brian Kelly. They offer them this incredible contract that I think you or I would accept if offered. So I just think it was it caught me off guard. It caught a lot of people off guard. But that's Scott Woodward's way. He makes splash hires. He goes to the top of the mountain to try to hire people, and he did it. And what I find interesting about that, Frank, Brian Kelly feels like his best opportunity to win a national championship is to be a coach in the SEC at LSU, which has had three coaches that have won national championships. And Lincoln Riley ran from the SEC to go to Southern Cal because yeah. he thought it would be harder to win in the SEC. I thought that was really interesting dichotomy between those two coaches.
Yeah, great point. They both saw it differently. You're exactly right. Speaking of Texas and Oklahoma, when do you think they will play their first game as SEC members?
I think it's going to be a year sooner than projected. I'm going to go 2024. Okay. I know there's going to be an exit fee to pay out. But my goodness, how hard is it to have a team in your conference for multiple years that you know is leaving that doesn't want to be a part of your conference? Now, there's some TV package money to be considered as well. You lose Texas and Oklahoma, and the TV partners can say, wait a minute, we're not paying you as much money as we've been paying you. So maybe Oklahoma State and Baylor and some others hold their nose and keep them in there for financial reasons. But I think there'll be a one-year early exit, I think 2024.
Let's get to the game. Georgia and Alabama. I've told people this, this myth out there that, well, Georgia doesn't need it as badly because they're going to be in the playoff either way is a bunch of bunk. Yes, they're going to be in the playoff even if they lose, but Georgia wants to win this game in the worst way, Jimmy. They haven't beaten Alabama in 14 years. They've lost six straight to the Crimson Tide. I think it's a gigantic game for Georgia, don't you?
I do, and they. I didn't know that stat about how long it had been since they beat Alabama, but they played Alabama three times in the conference championship game, hadn't beat them.
Right.
They've had them a couple of times, almost down and out, and couldn't quite get to the finish line. Yes, I think this is extremely important for Georgia, and I think it's extremely important to keep your confidence in an effort to try to win the national championship. I do think Alabama has a chance, mm-hmm. but gosh, that Georgia defense is so good. If you look at the quarterback comparison, you know, I'm taking Bryce Young over Stetson Bennett. But I think this is Georgia's year. If Alabama can't score in three quarters against Auburn, how are they going to muster much offense against Georgia? So I think it's Georgia's time. I think it's their year. And not only that, if you're Georgia and you beat Alabama, you don't have to worry about playing them in the college football playoff.
That's
again.
Right.
That's another factor to kick them out the door.
One more reason why the game is so important. One more thought on that game. Let me run this by you. Here's why I think I think Georgia's going to win, too. I like them to win the national title back in the summertime, so they're as good as I thought they would be. But I do think this. Georgia has not played a lot of elite defenses. They played Clemson, who's currently ninth in the nation in defense, in the first game and did not score an offensive touchdown. Since then, they have not played a defense that's in the top 20 nationally. Alabama's good on defense. People lose sight of that. Alabama's seventh in the nation in defense, only six spots behind that generational Georgia defense. Jimmy, I think it's a low-scoring game. I think it's a defensive game. I think it looks a little bit like Alabama-Auburn looked last week. I think Georgia's better than all of them, so I think Georgia's probably going to win this game by the time it's over, maybe 27 to 17, 24-17, 24-16. But I do think it's a defensive game. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. In fact, my score is similar to yours. I've got Georgia 20 to 17.
Yeah.
That's where I think it's going to fall. And you're going to see tremendous defensive play. And you're going to see Georgia getting after Bryce Young. Alabama's offensive line has struggled a little bit. If you're struggling a little bit, you don't want to face Georgia. And I do think Georgia's got a really good run game. Stetson Bennett just seems to make enough plays. He's not a great player. He's not an NFL guy. But he has done a nice job of doing what they ask him to do, which isn't necessarily a whole lot. So I do think Georgia wins it. I think it'll be by a field goal because I can't count out Nick Saban in Alabama. That team you saw against Auburn will be a much different team than you'll see against Georgia.
Jimmy Himes from the Sports Animal in Knoxville, Tennessee, year 27 of Frank and Jimmy is in the books. I think that's what it is. I'm so old, I can't really count much anymore, Jimmy. But as always, brother, fantastic work. Nobody talks SEC better than you do, my friend. And we've enjoyed it. And have a great holiday, my man. We'll do it again before you know it.
Frank, you have a great holiday. It's an honor to be home with you. And God willing, we'll do number 28 next year.
You're doggone right we will. Jimmy Himes checking in from the Sports Animal. Back in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, we're glad you're with us. We wind down from Dome Hats on a Stanley Pools Thursday. Glad you're with us at Old Rock Thursday as well. Allman Brothers style. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carlin, and Lauren Brooks. And our friend Chris Hetland joins us from Dome. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well.
Good to
doing
see
well.
You, man.
Good to see you guys.
How are things?
Fantastic.
Got cool hats here, cool stuff here.
Happy birthday.
I appreciate
That's
it.
Right.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. The big, what is it, 3-8.
There you go. There you go.
My dad's birthday is today as well. He is slightly older than you.
How about that? Happy birthday to Mike Brooks, too, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Big 75.
Hey, let me ask you this. Well, I want to ask you about Dome in a minute, but you played for Urban Meyer, and you told us many times stories about what an incredible motivator he was. You've told me that in numerous different stories about it. Are you surprised they're struggling a little bit? And it's a different in fairness to Urban, it's a different paradigm, and it's only 1 year, and it's only nine games in, or whatever it is. But are you or 11 games? Are you surprised?
Yeah, I'm really surprised. You know, the Meyer that came in at Florida when I was there, it seems like a different Meyer than we're seeing today.
Okay.
The passion, the fire, the confidence that he had when he came, and our first meeting that he had at Florida, and I've said this 100 times to you guys probably, he had every person in that room just wanting more, and they were all ready to go to war for that guy. And I was a kicker, so war for me is a little different than you know, your linebacker or
but I get it.
Remember, but well, shoot, I mean, I was ready to play linebacker.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that guy that he motivated everybody. Now, granted, he's not a guy that, you know, that you'd walk down the hall and high five and go, you know, go hang out with. But he was inspiring in his preparation and work ethic. And it's just not something I'm seeing that's translating here in Jacksonville. And it's a shame because as soon as, you know, when I heard that he was going to be the guy, I was elated. I mean, I thought he was going to be great for the team, for the city, and he was going to bring a lot of success here. I know it's early, and I know, but it's late enough to where you would think that we'd start seeing some progress, some change.
And in fairness, Hayes, it's nine games in or 11 games in. He's going to be here. It's not a 1 year deal, or he's going to learn the way too. But it was interesting to hear a former player because Chris has told us so many times. You guys were ready to run through the first time you met him. You want to run through a wall for the guy.
Oh yeah,
And I wonder you probably motivate professional athletes differently than you motivate college athletes, and that's part of it too.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, and Urban has credited the locker room for staying together. You know, so I mean, hopefully that's genuine, and hopefully they are, you know, buying into the culture that he is trying to establish here. The thing, Chris, that surprises me that I'm interested to get your expertise on is
the special teams have had so many mistakes. And that just, Urban Meyer just, it seemed like that was his thing. That was the little extra edge that he was able to have in the college game, is, are those special teams were so precise. And the kicking game's fine. You know, mm-hmm. it's been pretty good. But where you saw last week, a leverage penalty that keeps the drive going. Touchdown for the Falcons. We saw another drive extended because of offsides on a punt. Does that surprise you, knowing his background on special teams?
Well, we literally, our special teams meetings, they always went over until everybody in that room was on the same page. Everyone knew their assignment. The guy next to the guy knew the other guy's assignment. The preparation on special teams and the emphasis and the importance of it at Florida was second to none. I mean, he would always say, I mean, this is how, you know, the battle of field position. It's how you win the game. And he'd go over all the statistics with us and everything else. But the preparation and time that went into special teams, I mean, it was very important. And I can't believe that we're kind of having the struggles that we're having here.
And in that same vein, penalties. We're seeing a lot of offensive line and defensive line penalties. What would happen to a player? What was a traditional or standard punishment for a player who had that kind of penalty? Let's say a false start.
I don't know if punishment is the right way to put it, but it was, you were going to be so prepared, and you're going to be so ready to do your job for that 4 to 6 seconds, that those, they're sloppy penalties. Well, I mean, a lot of them. I guess you can't say you didn't tolerate it, but it just wasn't, it wasn't part of the culture. It wasn't part of what, yeah, kind of what we did. And I tell a lot of people, you know, winning is a culture. Or you have to establish that culture of winning. Like, you can have a great team and you can use more than half your games, but you're only losing by 3 points because you just don't know how to win yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just wonder this. I haven't given up on Urban Meyer. It's only, in fairness, look, the team was 1-15 last year. It's not like he got here and this really good team suddenly is a bad team. They're 1-15. Okay. He's already won twice as many games as they won last year, and he's got 6 more to play. All right. So, but I do believe, Chris, you learn, you motivate a 25-year-old professional with 2 kids at home who's earning a paycheck differently than you do an 18-year-old 2 years out of college who's, his most important thing now is to go home and go to his dorm and study for that biology test. Don't you think that? I mean, it's got to be different now.
You motivate a college player much differently than you would motivate a professional athlete in any sport. And I've worried since day one that the way he handled, and all I can speak for is, you know, myself and my teammates while he was at Florida, I was always concerned that it wouldn't translate in the NFL.
Okay.
And I'm worried that if he stays in his ways and doesn't adapt, I'm not sure how well that's going to play out. And I worry, you know, when I see him in press conferences and things like that now, that he's deflated a little bit and kind of lost his juice a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and hope that, okay, he's learning. He's probably motivating different today than he did 2 months ago, you know, that he's learning and he's going to go through the process. I think that, but I hear you. It's interesting. Yeah, he does in the press conferences, Hayes. Urban, you get the impression he's like, there's normal, natural frustration that I think you see. That's a good point that Chris made. I think you sense that.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think of Billy Napier? A lot of Gators news since last time we were.
You know what? Like I said earlier, I was a Mullen guy. But after, you know, the game last weekend, and, you know, I still like Mullen and respect him, but I think it was the right move, and I'm excited. And it seems like the guys in the locker room and around the program are jazzed up as well.
I can tell you this. There's an excitement level there in Florida in the building that is different than I've seen for the last couple hires. Now, Lauren, I'll also say it was that way for Muschamp too, which didn't work out. But there's an excitement in the building. It really was there when Urban got hired.
Yeah.
But just people that I know in the building, people that I know around it, there's a level of excitement around Billy Napier that was different than McElwain and Mullen. a different kind of excited. They were excited. You're always excited when you get the new coach because the new coach is undefeated and he's mm-hmm. excited. And he's going to do this and that. But it's a different. It's more like the Muschamp. And again, Muschamp it didn't work out. But that makes sense. I just mm-hmm. sense it. Just sense it. People around.
Will you be watching the Louisiana App State game on Saturday to see Napier's coaching tendencies?
Oh, I'm all over him now. We're locked. I'm on Twitter.
We're locked in.
Oh yeah. Change is exciting, especially in this instance, and I think he'll be able to get the athletes, and I think he's a high energy, got a lot of passionate guy, genuine passion.
Yeah.
None of this fake rah-rah stuff.
Yeah, we're tired of that. Well, don't be making a scared money, don't make money hat.
Right.
Got to make that hat. I want that hat. I want a scared money, don't make money hat. Okay.
Next time.
Quick update. How's things going at Dome? Look like it's going great.
Oh, it's going great. We're going to have one of our best years ever, which is awesome. Which is exciting. Expanding into new markets. Yeah. Excited about, this coming year. We've got a lot of big things going on with Ripken Baseball.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And another one of our partners, Marucci Sports.
Yeah. And country music still doing all that stuff?
I mean, they're finally feeling, packing out stadiums again.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great thing. That's a great thing. That's a great thing for Dome Hats.
That's a great thing for Dome Hats.
Yeah.
When George Strait's now playing in front of 55,000 instead of.
Needs a lot of hats. A
lot of hats.
Chris, thanks for having us out. We appreciate it. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do our picks. 1 second to go. We'll have it for you after this. Stay with us. All right, Allman Brothers today on Old Rock Thursday. Kind of a tribute to the South. We got a fantastic SEC championship game coming up on Saturday. Now, Gibby, give me some picks music because we got to do some picks here since I won't be here tomorrow. Last week in the picks, Lauren Brooks 4-2. Nice week for Brooks. 5 points. Hayes had 5 points because he got a game picker upper and a money ball. He was 3-3. Gibby 3-3, 4 points. I had my second under 500 weeks, only second one all year. I was 2-4 for 2 points. Here's how it looks: 58, 51, 49, 45. Carline, you're closing in. Okay, you made some ground up for that.
I like this team
for that championship. I know you
gritty.
Do. Let's get right to it. The SEC championship game. Lauren, you're up first. Who do you like?
I've told you all week I'm picking Alabama. Y'all can laugh at me all you want. I've got the Crimson Tide.
All right. Andrew and Gibby, I know you got bigger fish to fry. You're trying to win a championship too.
That's right.
But at least for now, Bama, Georgia, who do you like?
I like Georgia. There was a point in time in the Iron Bowl last week where Alabama had negative 19 yards rushing in the first half. I like that Georgia defense way more than the Auburn defense.
You got it. Hayes Carline for the Bowl School.
It's Georgia's year. Georgia wins the SEC on their way to the top seed in the playoff.
Game picker-upper for Brooks. She can make up some ground here. And by the way, I think it's a heck of a game. I think that game will be one heck of a game. Andrew Gibson, lead us off. Iowa and Michigan playing for the championship of the Big Ten Conference.
I like Michigan. I think they impressed me at least last week in their win against Ohio State. It was a huge one. Obviously, the first one for Harbaugh. He was 0-5 against Ohio State. I think they get it done against Iowa.
I'm coming with you. Hayes Carline.
I don't see how Iowa is going to score what it's going to need to. So, to me, it's a low-scoring game, but I really like Michigan's a little bit more balanced. So, give me the Wolverines.
And Lauren Brooks.
I'm disappointed in myself that I'm not going to take the game picker-upper, but sometimes you got to go with who you think the better team is. That would be the Wolverines.
I'm with you. I would have played it the same way. In the Atlantic Coast Conference, Hayes Carline from the Moss Pit. Pitt and Wake Forest, Tony Dorsett, Dan Marino. All in this one.
Tim Duncan. That's one right.
That's
very good.
There you go.
Yeah, Tim Duncan. To me, it's going to be a very entertaining game. I'm going to go with the team that I think is going to make one or two more stops. And to me, that's Pitt. Give me Kenny Pickett and the Pitt Panthers.
Lauren Brooks.
I have Kenny Pickett in the Loser Monday, so I may as well cheer for the team that I'm already cheering for. Give me Pitt. I honestly think this is maybe the hardest game to pick all weekend, but I'll take Pitt.
I'm torn on this one, Gibby. You go last. I got to go next. I'm back and forth on this one. I'm taking Wake. I'm going to go against them. I'm going to go against the grain a little bit. I'll take Wake Forest.
Good for you.
Andrew Gibson, who do you like?
Yeah, I would have picked Wake after, but until they lost to North Carolina and Clemson, that kind of changed my opinion of Wake Forest. I'll take Pitt.
All right, I got a little game picker-upper. You know what?
I think that's a good game picker-upper.
Let me tell you what you do. You don't isolate Tim Duncan. You better cover. Yeah. You better double him is what I got to say, just so you know that.
I read a really good story about Sam Hartman, by the way, the week for his quarterback earlier today. Yeah, he had struggled with some mental health issues, and he said that playing football really saved his life.
How about that? That's very awesome. Cool. Very cool stuff. I'll take Wake Forest, Chris Paul, and Tim Duncan. Let's go to – give me some National Football League news music, please. Give.
He's ahead of you.
Hayes Carlion, the Bengals, and Joe Burrow are home against Justin Herbert and the Chargers. Who do you like?
Yeah, fantastic quarterback matchup. This could be a potential AFC title game 3 or 4 years down the road, perhaps. I'm going to take Joe Burrow at home, please.
All right, I'm coming with you. Joe Burrow, and I just wrote down Burrow, not Bengals. I'll take Bengals as well. Lauren Brooks.
Give me Justin Herbert, the quarterback I loved out of college.
Love it.
Going against Chargers.
Going against the grain, Andrew Gibson.
I think there's another Joe on the Bengals that's playing even better, and that's Joe Mixon. Give me the Bengals.
Ooh, Brooks, you got another game picker-upper. She's gone
week.
Two games. Yes, it could be a really big week. Steelers at home against the Ravens. This is normally a really good game. They got to play. They still have two games against each other. I thought long and hard about this. I don't think the Steelers are any good. I'm not sure the Ravens are as good as I thought they would be. But the Ravens are a 3.5-point road favorite, so I will take them. Andrew Gibson.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson threw four picks, I think, last week and won the game. Pittsburgh got absolutely just dominated by the Bengals. That surprised me. I'm going to go Ravens.
And Lauren Brooks.
Ravens.
And Hayes Carlion. Who do you like?
You know my fiance is a huge Ravens fan.
I do.
So I am picking Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, you don't want to mess that up.
Good I am one. Not messing
Hayes,
that up.
Hayes likes to go game picker up or anytime there's an opportunity, but not at the risk of domestic strife.
Not at the risk of that.
That I totally get. Jags, Rams, I guess we got to go through it. Lauren, who you like?
I'll take the Rams.
Andrew Gibson.
Yes, I will take the Rams. I would love to see an upset. I don't see it.
Hayes Carlion.
Trevor Lawrence is going to Los Angeles.
Yes.
And Urban Meyer is going to Los Angeles to take a big loss, unfortunately. I would love it to be different, but the Rams are going to win, and they're going to win comfortably.
The money ball says Rams across the board. I like them as well. So Lauren likes Alabama. That's her game picker-upper. The rest of us like Georgia. We all took Michigan over Iowa. I went game picker-upper. I took Wake. You guys all like Pitt in the ACC game. Back to the NFL, Lauren again, game picker-upper with the Chargers. The rest of us like the Bengals. Ravens, Steelers, we all took the Ravens. Rams, Jags, we all took the Rams. Those are our picks. One more time, the standings, 58 for me, 51 Hayes, 49 Gibby, 45 for Lauren. Those are our picks. Almost out of time. What did you think of the Gators last night, the Gator basketball game last night?
I thought if maybe they had shot a little bit better from the arc, then it would have been a better game down the stretch. I did think that Florida got kind of pushed around a little bit, whether you want to say the officials weren't calling things. I'm not going to necessarily say that, but it certainly showed that, you know, when Castleton goes up against a guy that's a lot bigger than him, it's going to end up
thicker.
In trouble,
it's
much
thicker
than Castleton.
You know, I thought it was a good sign overall. It's tough to lose, but, you know, to play him close with 16 turnovers and just 7 assists and to shoot as miserably as they shot, 4 of 24 from threes, as Lauren pointed out, I think long-term it's encouraging for where they are, but it was a disappointing result. The other thing I would say is he needs to start using his bench a little bit more. He has Myron Jones playing 39 minutes and 39 seconds. I mean, to me, that's and he only, Felder and Fleming were the only two guys that played off the bench. So I think you got to use your bench a little bit more than that. I don't know if maybe fatigue was a little bit of a factor in those final 2 minutes. Loved how they hung in and dug back out with the 8-0 run, but couldn't finish it, unfortunately.
I think it was a good sign that they shot that badly and still almost won the game. You're going to have games you can't throw it in the ocean. Now, the downside of that is, are they going to be a team that's a little challenged offensively? You know they're good defensively. They're going to play good defense against everybody. But will they be challenged? When they play another good defensive team like them, will they have a tough time scoring?
Because it was the first true road game,
correct.
You know, that certainly played a factor. Yeah. Oklahoma, they honored Lon Kruger at halftime. They were roaring to go. And, I mean, I think Mike White, he is a guy that – he doesn't always make the adjustment right away that I feel like. He takes the timeouts, but I don't know that he makes the adjustments right away. I feel like it takes him a little while to make them.
I thought I thought true road game, first road game. They battled. Again, I don't know how good they'll be offensively, but I thought top to bottom, they're going to be in most games. They're going to find a way to be in those games. And
Fleming,
I thought,
thank goodness for him.
Yeah, he may be their best player. He's certainly their most active. I'll go the other way on you a little bit, Hayes. And maybe during the season you got to save some legs. I hope when they get in the tournament that is their rotation. I think you play your guys. Maybe one more guy, maybe Reeves or maybe Elijah Kennedy. But again I thought it was, look, they didn't play very well. They shot 30 some odd percent. Oklahoma shot almost 50%, and it was still came right down to the wire. But can they make shots? That's always going to be the question about this team. You know they're going to play hard. They're going to rebound. They're going to defend. Will they be able to make shots against a good defensive team? All that great ball movement, you didn't see that last. They've been moving the ball really well.
But Oklahoma also is a real – like, that's what I think people going into the game didn't necessarily realize is Oklahoma defensively, that's where Porter Moser super focuses and makes his hay. So they knew they were going up against a tough team defensively.
Great watching the – did you watch the tribute at halftime, DeLon Cruz?
Yes.
Did you watch it?
I did not.
It was real – the little bit they showed.
Yeah, and his brother was narrating.
Yeah, he's probably one of my favorite people I've ever covered. Got to know him really well at Florida, and I really like him. He's one of the most genuinely good people you'll ever cover. Man, he did it a long time now. Did he take five teams to the tournament?
Yes.
Is that five? Five.
It may have been six.
Kansas State, Illinois, Vegas, Florida, Pan Am. I think it's five. Did I miss one?
Did you say Oklahoma?
Yeah, I don't think you said Oklahoma.
Oh, six then.
I think it was six.
Okay, I think Texas Pan Am went to the tournament.
Yeah.
So he took six teams, six, to the NCAA tournament. How about that?
That's a record that probably will never be broken.
I mean, can you imagine six different teams to the NCAA tournament? I mean, and he took both.
And he looked great.
He did look great. He's 69 years old. Yeah, he always looked great. About a four handicap golfer.
Oh, okay.
And he spent a lot of time up here recruiting. We got to be pretty good buddies. We would go to lunch and he would drive when I was covering the team, and it was he had this Cadillac with Kevin Kruger, who's probably now a 30-something year old coach.
Mm-hmm.
Was like five or six.
Yeah.
You'd have to clear the toys out of the car when we go to lunch. It was really cool.
By the way, if Florida was going to lose a basketball game and you offered me obviously the teams that they've beaten, Florida State and Ohio State and then Oklahoma, of the three teams to lose to, I'll take the Oklahoma game.
Very, very. That's a very good point. All right, let's say hello to Rick Pelu.
Now, the two-minute drill brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
Rick Pelu has set up shop at Mr. Chubby's. What's up, Ricky B?
You know, there's a lot going on. I'm a little perplexed here tonight because we're 90 minutes away from the dropping of the puck in Nashville. And the Boston Bruins are on Broadway tonight without Brad Marchand, who used his skate as a check. And it's cost him three games, so I don't like our offensive chances tonight.
Wow.
So that could affect me during the broadcast.
What about Patty Bergeron? Is he ready to go? Is he good?
Patty Bergeron, yes, in search of his 400th goal. He's 400th career goal. He's only 11 away from that mark.
Right, I feel better. If you were going to tell me no Marchand, no Bergeron, I wasn't going to watch. But now that they're there, I feel way better, Rick. Very good stuff. What's coming up tonight, my man? What are we doing?
We got a lot. I mean, listen, Steve Adazio, Bronco Mendenhall. So if I'm trying to do the math here, I believe that's 23 coaches out of the 130 in the world of college football that will change hands this year. And, you know, more could be coming. We'll see what happens with Manny Diaz and Lane Kiffin. And who knows, there could be another one here down the road. But that's got to be high. Isn't it usually, 14, 15, somewhere in that neighborhood? Maybe I'm dead wrong here, but I can't remember a year where 23 coaches have changed jobs.
Yeah, it's amazing. The Mendenhall thing just came out for people that didn't know. Bronco Mendenhall, the Virginia coach, just said he's only 58, 56.
Mm-hmm.
Steady stepping down. It's a crazy time in college.
Yeah, not for another job, just once retired.
He just doesn't want to do it anymore, so it's interesting stuff. Now, Rick, I agree with you, brother. All kind of fun stuff coming up. So we appreciate it, man. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, Rick Pelu coming up at Mr. Chubby's in just a bit. Well, that's going to do it for me for the week. Can you guys handle it? You got it?
We will do our best.
I'm going to miss doggone Island Wings. I'm not happy about that development.
We got coconut shrimp.
Unbelievable. I'm very happy
extra,
about that.
Extra ration.
An extra shrimp for each.
I can't say I'm upset about that.
An extra shrimp for each, doggone. Now I'm even more bummed out. I forgot about that part. But Hayes and Lauren will have it for you tomorrow. along with Gibby. I'll be on the road to Los Angeles.
Have a great trip.
Thank you so much. You want me to bring back a win?
That'd be great.
Want to win? You want to win?
At first I thought you said a wing.
A wing and a win.
I was thinking island wings. A win would be great. Prove us all wrong.
Folks, that'll do it for our program. Rick Ballew comes up right now. Hayes and Lauren have it for you tomorrow. I'll see you back on Monday after the Jags and Rams. Thanks again to our friends here at Dome, Jeff and Chris, and all the folks here having us out. We're out of here. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Franzi. So long.